Welcome to Magnetic Marketing. This is not a series of cassettes you listen to for entertainment or motivation. This is a toolkit designed to turn ordinary businesses into extraordinary money machines, ordinary sales careers into top performance, maximum income careers. It is an unusual program, right down to its configuration. On this side of this first cassette, I'm going to get you acquainted with everything now at your fingertips. Then we can dig in and get to work. Tapes 2, 3, 4, and 5 are tapes you can just listen to. They are intended to quickly bring you up to speed on all the foundational concepts behind magnetic marketing. You need to hear them several times to be able to use everything else in this toolkit. A good way to use tapes 2, 3, 4, and 5 is to listen while driving to and from work, or while driving to and from sales calls, or while doing chores around the house. These tapes provide brief bullets of information excerpted from very lengthy interviews conducted with me about advertising, marketing, and the process of substituting my magnetic marketing for every other means of acquiring customers, clients, or patients. You can think of these as a cassette program within a program. These four tapes stand alone. Casual listening of these four tapes is fine. Repeated listening will work for you. And you should start listening to these tapes immediately while simultaneously proceeding with the rest of the toolkit. On the rest of this side of this first tape, I'm going to talk you through all of the exhibits in the notebook in front of the first tab section. Frankly, some of these exhibits will not make a lot of sense to you until you've heard all the tapes, but it's important for you to be familiar with what's here. Over time, you will want to study these examples and refer to them as you actually use the strategies taught here and use the other tools in the kit. On the other side of this cassette, we'll deal with where to get the prospects you will use all of these strategies and tools on. We'll talk about how to get and effectively use lists. Jumping to tape 6, on its side 1, I'll talk you through the 6 different business models included in the tab sections of your kit. These sections contain the copyright-free letters and other marketing documents that you can use as close to as-is as you like. On side 2 of tape 6, I discuss what I consider to be the 3 giant differences between the many people who experience enormous success with my methods versus those who do not. Now, I want you to get a fast start. How fast can you get started? If you will listen to tapes 2, 3, 4, and 5 as you commute or at other times this week and next, and over those same 10 to 15 days, set aside as little as a half hour each day. First, to listen to the rest of this tape and to tape 6 at a time and place where you can fully concentrate, follow along in the notebook, and take notes. And second, to put together your first actual use of these materials. Then in 15 days or less, you can be into implementation. You can be successfully using this toolkit to create measurable, profitable results. If you've heard me speak on this subject, you may remember that there was a giant 3-step framework involved: message, plus market, plus media. Coordinating the right message with the right media and getting it delivered to the right market. The exhibits in the notebook in front of the first tab largely illustrate messages. Then on side 2 of this tape, we'll zero in on markets and media. There's one other thing I'd like you to know. This is the second, completely overhauled version of this toolkit. I brought all of my business, marketing, and consulting experience to the table a little over 2 years ago and developed the first version of this kit with assistance from another marketing consultant. The world was then and is now filled with books, tapes, courses, and even seminars that tell you what to do, but never equip you with the tools to do it with or enable you to get a fast start. I taught that way myself for years. At the time, the first version of this kit was a quantum leap up and over anything else in the entire subject area of marketing, as well as the embodiment of my own unique approaches. And through my frequent speaking engagements on programs with Zig and Peter, through other seminars, and through the mail, a huge number of those kits were sold, and people have achieved some really phenomenal results. But by comparison, that kit was as primitive as cooking over a campfire compared to this version, as advanced as a microwave. If you will apply yourself as I've suggested, in as short a time as 15 days, you'll completely understand magnetic marketing and be using it in your business. Now let's start by looking through the exhibits that I've assembled for you. All of the exhibits are located in the notebook before the first tab section, but immediately after a few pages of introductory information and, depending on how you purchase this kit, bonus coupons. There is a separator page titled Exhibits. Exhibit number one is a quick read about unique selling proposition. You can build your magnetic marketing systems on a solid foundation or on shifting sand. That's your choice. But if you want a solid foundation, you'll take the time to understand what a unique selling proposition is all about. This material comes from one of my most successful students and clients, Jeff Paul. He teaches my kind of marketing to a single industry, financial services, notably certified financial planners. His monologue here about USP is reprinted from his newsletter. Exhibit number two deals with another component part of your marketing message, your headline or headlines. In most cases, your headline should incorporate and summarize your USP. Headlines appear on all ads, all letters, and you even verbally use a headline when starting a conversation, in person or over the phone. This particular exhibit is from Entrepreneur Magazine's regular columnist on advertising. There are other examples later in this kit. How important is this? The advertising and sales battle is at least 70% won or lost right here with the headline. Exhibit number three is another brief article you need to take time to read, also from Jeff Paul, also dealing with your marketing message. This talks about emotion in copywriting. Most people make the mistakes of creating marketing materials devoid of emotion, or of insisting that in their particular business, emotion is inappropriate. This article can help you avoid these costly errors. Exhibit number four is a media example, a lead generation advertisement. As we'll discuss on side two, one way to obtain a highly responsive list is to create it through your own lead generation advertising. For most salespeople, lead generation advertising can replace prospecting. Let me say that one again. For most salespeople, lead generation advertising can replace prospecting. Exhibit number five is another lead generation advertisement. If you compare, you'll see that these two ads have certain things in common. They both deal with consumer issues, weight loss and cosmetic surgery. So does this kind of advertising apply elsewhere? Well, I'm glad you asked. Exhibit number six, courtesy of Jeff Paul, shows you outstanding, highly effective lead generation ads, large and small, used by certified financial planners to attract new clients. After our discussion of lead generation on side two, you'll want to look at these exhibits again more closely. You might tag them now with post-it notes. Exhibit number seven is a media example, a sales letter used successfully by a Hallmark store to promote its entry into the marketplace in its community. If you're a retailer, there are many things about the content of this letter worth noting. But the point I'll emphasize here and now is that this is a letter 4 pages long, filled with copy for a greeting card store. No one in that field has ever used such a thing before, and they would all argue it's too long, it's too wordy, too cluttered, too ugly, nobody will read it, it costs too much to send out, and so on, and they're all wrong. Because this worked, and it works. Keep in mind that this is an actual example. By the way, take special note of the main headline, the pre-headline above left in italics, the redefinition of the business at the top of its page two, and the multiple offers throughout and at the end, and the PS notations. Exhibit number eight is a complete series of letters for the Simple Salmon food business in Vancouver, Canada. Its owner is a student and newsletter subscriber of mine. Following the very same models and information available to you in this toolkit, he developed these letters on his own with no help from me and no other training or education in copywriting, writing, or advertising. And this is a very, very successful campaign. Again, an actual example, not theory. Reproduced here, the initial sequence of 3 sales letters for his free dinner offer, sent to leads he generates through lead generation advertising in various media, including the Yellow Pages, through radio talk show appearances, and from referrals. everybody gets the first letter. Those who don't respond get the second, and so on. I've also given you one of his follow-up sales letters. Exhibits number 9 and number 10 reinforce the very important premise of a sequence of letters, rather than a single letter or sporadic, unconnected mailing. One of the most important keys to mind magnetic marketing is the use of a clearly linked time sequence of letters. The why rationale for this, as well as the other strategies represented here, can best be understood by listening to tapes 2, 3, 4, and 5. Exhibit number 11 is another actual, very successful example from a student of mine, in this case, an art gallery owner. This is what I call a cash flow surge letter. It is targeted at past and present customers and accumulated unconverted leads. In his case, this mailing to less than 4,000 people produced $56,000 in immediate business over and above the volume that would have been done during that same time period based on comparisons with previous years in business. By the time the trickle effect ended, mailing this letter was worth over $70,000 to Don. Again, he wrote this himself, based on the same models and information you have, with no other training or background in advertising, marketing, or copyright. Among the many content items worth noting when you study this letter, see how he creates an irresistible offer, then raises the objections, the reasons why people won't respond, and then answers those objections. Any sales veteran will recognize all that as selling 101. I teach the same methods in sales training for one-on-one or group presentations. You see, sales letters, actually all good marketing documents, are simply selling in print. Exhibit number 12 is another actual example of a special purpose letter, in this case, a referral stimulation letter. Exhibits numbers 13 and 14 are examples of actual companies' newsletters published and distributed to past and present customers, accumulated leads, and selected new prospects. When you think about connecting these different kinds of letters and mailings, there are two basic contact strategies to keep in mind. First, what I call planting the farm, or creating the relationship, and that is usually done with a tightly timed sequence of clearly linked letters, 3, 4, 5, whatever. Second, there's a period of time of less intense continuing communication with yet unconverted leads, as well as an always continuing communication with customers or clients. I suggest 10 to 12 mailings per calendar year. Exhibit number 15 is another media example, a tool that gets used as an enclosure supplement to letters, showing testimonials. This example is especially interesting because it is an industry-specific collection of testimonials. In this case, the target market, the farm, that the doctor is focused on is professional flight attendants. He is approaching that market with lead generation advertising in their trade journals and with direct mail. As a tool, he has assembled testimonials exclusively from other flight attendants. Exhibit number 16 is another example of lead generation advertising, demonstrating how even the yellow pages can be used in this way. This is from the same Simple Salmon food business you saw a few exhibits back. Exhibit number 17 introduces you to one of the very few experts at applying my kind of marketing to the retail store business, Murray Raffel. This article, reprinted from Direct Marketing Magazine, demonstrates exactly how targeted direct mail can literally make a retail business. Exhibits number 18 through number 23 are templates, illustrations of how your sales letters and ads should look. Of course, there are many ways to violate these formats and still win. I can certainly show you successful exceptions. But while learning and while striving for a fast start, you'll make your life a lot easier by sticking to a limited number of proven looks. Note that the sales letter has a photo and a headline, but then a courier typeface, a typewriter look, although there are bold-faced subheads. In the tabbed sections of the kit, you'll find the copyright-free letter campaign and other marketing documents developed for each of six different categories of businesses. You'll most directly steal from one of the six closest to your business, but by The facts, concepts, and ideas that make target marketing the inarguably best approach are discussed on tapes 2 through 5. Here, we're diving right into the mechanics. Most businesses and salespeople are going to deal with one or a combination of these types of basic target markets or farms. Number 1, past and present customers or clients. Ironically, the most neglected and usually the most productive of any and all target markets. Number 2, geographic. A state, a county, a set of zip codes, a neighborhood, a subdivision. For a business-to-business marketer, this might be a single office tower or a shopping center or district. Number 3, geodemographic. Certain selections within a defined geographic area. For example, within the zip codes you've chosen, you might want only the homeowners but not the renters, or only the renters but not the homeowners. Only certain occupations or income levels, or only marrieds and families, or only singles. Or in general business-to-business marketing situations, this might be, within a certain zip code, only certain types of businesses, only businesses with a certain number of employees, or certain sales volumes, only businesses that have sales forces, only businesses that have fleets of cars and trucks. Number 4. Industry select. For business-to-business marketers operating nationally or internationally, there'll be no geographic selectivity. You'll target one industry or a segment of an industry by type or size of company. Number 5, affinity. A target where you'll have instant recognition and rapport. If you're active in your Chamber of Commerce, this could be all the other chamber members. If your kid plays Pop Warner football, it's all the other parents of kids who play Pop Warner football. We have a very successful tavern in Phoenix, owned and operated by 3 transplanted Chicago guys. The tavern is only for people transplanted from Chicago. They televise all the Bears and the Bulls and, God help them, the Cubs. They serve Chicago sliders and so on. They've replicated Chicago. Okay, now how do you get your lists of prospects that match the ideal target market you've defined? Well, the mailing list industry is such today that if you can define it and are willing to pay for it, you can get it. So if you want a list of midgets who drive Ford automobiles and rent videos who live in Glen Cove, New York, you can get it. It'll be a small list, pardon the pun, but it's obtainable. But before we talk about these commercially available lists, let's discuss lead generation advertising as an alternative. You can use lead generation advertising to create your own very current list, actually very current stream, of self-qualified prospects within a target market. The job of this type of advertising is to do one thing and one thing only: get the highly qualified prospect to stand up and point himself out to you. Now, if you try to do more, you'll fail. This is not the place or time to build your image, create name recognition, talk about your product's benefits. No, this is to do one job and one job only. Conceptually, a lead generation ad works a lot like a personals ad. It describes who you want to respond and, by statement or exclusion, who you do not want to respond, like this. Single white male seeks passionate single white female, or divorced white female, 30 to 40, likes to experiment in the kitchen and elsewhere, travel and theater, concerts and museums. Please, no smokers, no heavy drinkers, no drug users. That ad describes in detail, as well as tone, who the advertiser wants to respond, the type of person he wants to respond, and in this case, by both direct statement and exclusion, who he does not want to respond. So let's take a business situation. Let's say I market job safety equipment, educational materials, and services to heavy industrial companies. My ideal prospect is the chief executive officer of a medium-sized manufacturing company with no fewer than 300 to about 2,000 employees. He has to be very concerned about workers' comp and insurance costs, but also concerned about his employees' well-being. So I go find an appropriate magazine. Let's say there's such a thing as Manufacturing CEO Magazine. Here's my ad. Attention, important free offer and a warning for the CEO of a manufacturing company with 300 to 2,000 employees. Are you frustrated and concerned with workers' comp and insurance cost spirals? Are you bottom-line savings savvy, but also sincerely concerned with employee health, safety, and morale? Warning, you are the target of the new insurance government health care reform master plan, and if you fail to protect your interests now, you will be victimized with amazing cost increases in the future. I have important information that can help you immediately reduce on-the-job injuries and improve productivity at minimal cost, and that can be important in protecting your interests in the future. For a free copy of my detailed research report, 19 Little-Known Manufacturing-Specific Strategies for Controlling and Reducing Healthcare Costs and Safety Liability Risks, call and hear my brief free recorded message, 1-800-123-SAFE. After hearing my message, you may leave your name, title, company name, and address with the automated system, and the free report will be rushed to you without cost or obligation, and no salesman will subsequently call. Or simply fax your business card to 212-555-8888. Now let's say I'm a florist, and by redefining or reinventing my business, I have a guaranteed special occasion reminder and gift plan for busy executives. Here's my ad, probably in the business section of the newspaper or a weekly business journal. The headline would say, "Free roses delivered to the lady of your choice." Attention, busy executives who forget, parentheses, or worry about forgetting, important occasions, birthdays, anniversaries, Secretary's Day, etc. Join our Never Forget Again Club. We'll guarantee you'll be reminded of every important gift-giving occasion in your life, and we'll make gift-giving easier than ever before. And when you join, we'll give a dozen fresh roses free from you to anyone you designate. For details, call my free recorded message, 000-ROSE. Now consider the value or quality of the lead generated by this kind of an ad as opposed to a lead selected from a commercially available mailing list. The florist, for example, can certainly rent a list of executives in his area, and he can specify sex, age, income level, type of business, and so on. But how much more valuable is the executive from within that database who takes the initiative to raise his hand and respond to this ad? Well, in comparative conversions, he's probably 500% to 2,000% better. So my preference, when it can be done, is to use lead generation advertising instead of mailing cold to commercially available lists, even though the per lead cost may be considerably higher. Also, perfecting your offer and your sales letters with these highest quality leads is faster than doing it with rented names. However, once you have a series of letters that work well with these leads, there probably are commercially available lists that the same series will deliver satisfactory results from, too. If you are going to rent commercially available lists, you should start your investigation and planning at a main city public library that has a copy of the Standard Rate and Data Service, SRDS, directory. In SRDS, you'll find detailed descriptions of just about every available mailing list, indexed and cross-indexed by topic. The list's national managers and brokers will also be listed so that you can contact them directly. If you are a local business marketing only locally, you may find it easier to work with a local list broker found in your own Yellow Pages. If you are a small quantity mailer, you're going to find the process of getting the lists you want cumbersome, aggravating, and relatively expensive, but it is still worth it. Generally speaking, money spent in list selection is money spent on lead quality, which is money well spent. A lot of your interest in using lists will depend on how you want to spend your money. Let's assume you own a health food store. Well, you can run ads with pictures of products, prices, and coupons in your daily and weekly newspapers and your alternative lifestyle weekly, on radio, even on TV. And in all cases, you know you are paying for a great deal of waste. If you pay $1,000 for an ad that reaches 100,000 people, hey, that divides out to just a penny each, but that's irrelevant. How many of those people never see your ad, have no interest whatsoever in health foods and vitamins, have a brand name or current store loyalty, and so on? But if you ran that as a lead generation ad, you could measure cost per lead, which is much more relevant than cost of circulation. And if you offered a free health-related report in a weekly newspaper with 100,000 circ, you might get 50 responses, a cost of $20 per lead. Another option is to get a list of subscribers to Prevention or Longevity magazine who live in your city. Maybe there are 300 of them. You have to rent 5,000 names at $40 a thousand, $200 total, to get the 300 names you want. Cost per name, 67 cents. Then a mailing offering the same report might pull a 20% response, maybe better, 60 leads against list cost of $200. Mailing of a series of three letters to 300, 900 letters total at 50 cents each, $450. A total of $650 or $10.83 per lead. In a sense, when you use commercially available mailing lists, you are legally stealing customers that other marketers have already invested heavily in finding and qualifying. Few small business owners or salespeople understand this, so you have an instant competitive advantage by using selected rented lists. Just about every business or sales professional has the ability to use some lists. With this information under your belt, the exhibits in your notebook before the first tab will be more meaningful, and you may want to review them carefully now before moving on. For implementation, you can jump ahead to tape number 6. However, be sure you are working your way through tapes 2, 3, 4, and 5 daily with more casual listening.
Trying to abdicate responsibility and with it control for the whole marketing process. You know, it's a natural thing to look for a wizard, for someone to hand the whole thing off to and say, just deliver me customers and I'll sit here behind my counter or I'll run my printing press or I'll watch over the food in my restaurant or whatever and be happy not having to deal with that part of the business and not realizing that that is the business. And when you give that responsibility and that control away, you have very few options of who to give it to. And frankly, most of the people who will take it and take money along with it are really not as well qualified to make the marketing decisions about your business as you are qualified to make those choices. So that generally is a big mistake, and it tends to compound. The business owner tends to jump from one hopefully quick fix, one magic answer, one wizard to another, continuing to write checks along the way and generally not getting the response that he needs to get. They're failing to craft messages. They're really ahead of themselves. Marketing starts with several very simple steps. The first of which is determining what message you're going to put out into the marketplace, what we're going to say about your business, your product, your service, why you're better, why you're different. We call that the right message. And then you have to determine what your markets, your best markets, what we call the right markets are, which simply means who you're going to communicate that message to. And then there is the right media, which is the method of delivery, how you're going to get that message to that market. Are you going to use mail? Are you going to use billboards? Are you going to use TV? Are you going to use the telephone? Whatever. And the message comes first. If you get the message crafted right, the other things begin to seem obvious. When most business owners start to deal with marketing and say, hey, we got to get some customers in here. What are we going to do to get customers? They jump all the way to the media stage. And they start to make choices of, well, let's run an ad in the newspaper, or let's send out a flyer, or hey, the Valpak representative showed up last week and gave us a pretty good story. Let's put a coupon in Valpak. And they deal with the media choices without giving any thought to what it is they want to communicate and who they want to communicate it to, and then what the best ways are to find those people. So they're really way ahead of themselves. And therefore, even if they, by chance, pick the best media they could possibly use, they use it poorly, and it delivers inferior results for them. Well, the sad truth is most business owners are sold on whatever advertising and marketing they do. One of the reasons that direct mail is relatively unpopular with small business owners is because there's no rep of direct mail. Very often, most often, they're sold what probably is the worst kind of advertising for them, and the advertising is being sold to them purely based on its profitability to the seller of the advertising. Very much so this is true with advertising agencies. I used to be in the agency business, and the truth of the matter is what people don't understand about ad agencies is that ad agencies, by and large, are simply commissioned media sales representatives. They're no better and no worse than the Yellow Pages rep. Well, the third tool would be participation in coupon decks like Valpak or Money Mailer or whatever happens to be in your area. And I'm going to quickly say that I know that a great many people listening have tried one, two, or all three of these media and have gotten unsatisfactory results. And there are a number of reasons for that that have nothing whatsoever to do with the media itself. And it starts by jumping to the media without taking the proper steps to be able to use the media properly. You sabotage yourself before you get started. Once you know how to properly use these tools, these three media, Yellow Pages, the three-step letter sequence, which I think is probably unique to us, and the Valpak Money Mailer type of coupon decks consistently deliver the biggest bang for the buck of anything that you can possibly do to attract customers to a business. First of all, it is dramatically different from any advertising you're going to see for an Italian restaurant. I suggest that you go to your Yellow Pages book and you pick up your newspaper and look in the entertainment section and look anywhere and everywhere you wish, and you're not going to find advertising like this for an Italian restaurant. You can bring in every advertising agency, every account executive, every media person, every so-called expert you can find in your area, and none of them are going to take the time to sit with you and pull these ideas out of you and put together this kind of a marketing message. It's just not going to happen. You've either got to do it yourself by learning the way that we're helping you to learn, or you've got to do it in concert with some freelancer who is thoroughly educated in these concepts, and we can help you find those people. From this first letter, mailed to 2,000 households, this restaurant booked about 140 dinners. I doubt seriously if you could find any other approach to advertising and marketing for that restaurant, for any restaurant for that matter, that could generate those numbers of dinners for those marketing dollars. Essentially, what we did is we invented a new business within the business, and I hope that you can see that. We invented the romance business and plugged it into the restaurant business and dramatically changed what it is that he was saying to his marketplace. His results didn't stop there, though, because we did go ahead with a second letter and a third letter. In the second letter, we restated the entire offer, resold the entire offer, and then added at no extra cost at the $59.95, sending a stretch white limousine to the home to pick up the couple, bring them to dinner, and return them home afterwards. And you take a stack of 3x5 cards, and you begin to put one item, one feature, one fact about your business, product, or service, one idea, one theme, one item, if you will, on each card. And you want to think in terms of all the features, all the benefits. If you were going to try and write a one-sentence description of each one of those things, if you were going to write a headline for an advertisement about each one of those things, all the different ways that you could describe them, the more cards, the merrier. For example, to differentiate features from benefits, the feature of a dry cleaner would be same-day service. And so on a 3x5 card, you would certainly, if you were building a case for a dry cleaner, you would write down same-day service. Now, you also want to be able to translate that into benefits. And one benefit that might go on the next 3x5 card would be that you can drop your clothes off on the way to work in the morning and pick them up on the way home from work that same afternoon. Now we've given that feature meaning and we've personalized it to the individual's need. One of the features that a lawyer might have would be a free consultation, a no-cost consultation with a client. Now the benefit statement that he might choose to make about that is that you can come in and have your questions answered and determine whether or not you have a viable case or a good solution to your legal problem without committing any funds and without spending any money. Often chiropractors will offer a free consultation or a free exam. And then the benefit statement about that is that we can determine whether or not your health problem can be helped with chiropractic before you commit to a treatment program. So national chain of stores called Egghead Software, and they have a good one, their feature is that you can come in and try any software program on their computers before you purchase it. Obviously, the benefit statement about that is that you never get home with a software program that doesn't work the way you thought it was going to or that doesn't do the things that you needed it to do. One of the hottest trends in the beauty salon business now are imaging systems. And the feature is that the customer can come in and sit down essentially at a computer screen and try out hundreds, sometimes thousands of different hairstyles and pick the one that they like best and show it to the stylist before the stylist ever works on their hair. The obvious benefit is that you get exactly the style you want. No mistakes, no errors. For example, a maintenance service that deals with apartment owners will offer to come in and change out the washers on the washing machines in the laundry rooms to prevent flooding. And that's a means of establishing a relationship with that apartment owner and demonstrating the quality of the service that can be delivered. Another service business example is the person who offered to come to the home and change out the filters in the air conditioning or the furnace for free. And that gives him an opportunity to sell his other services. Even manufacturers need to go through this same process and look for the same kinds of creative marketing opportunities. If I was a manufacturer of jewelry, for example, I could take the jewelry promotion letter and concept that we talked about earlier and use that to market my jewelry products to other types of retailers or to jewelers to use as premiums and promotional items. In other words, the manufacturer of the Cubic Z bracelets would give a copy of the sales letter that we talked about earlier to the retail business in order to show him how to use the cubic zirconium bracelets as premium and promotional items, and then to sell him a large quantity of his bracelets. It's important to understand that the marketplace today is as skeptical or more skeptical and more cynical and more instantly disbelieving than it has ever been. We've been taught in fairly recent years the lesson of not trusting anybody. We've certainly learned that we can't trust our elected politicians. President Nixon taught us that, but he certainly does not have an exclusive on having taught us that lesson. More recently, we've learned that we can't trust our ministers. Jim and Tammy and Jimmy Swaggart taught us that lesson, but they don't have an exclusive on that lesson either. And over and over and over again, the American public has been taught that they can't trust anybody. And when you exaggerate beyond belief, or when you outright lie, when you use deceptive techniques to do business, you simply exaggerate that problem. And you may do business with somebody once on that basis, but you'll certainly not do business with them a second time. And doing business the second time is really what smart business is all about. Long-term thinking is very important in structuring marketing strategies and marketing messages. Well, I think widget making is the number one marketing skill. It's the number one most important skill you'll ever learn as a business owner. And once you've got it, you'll use it over and over and over again every day in your business. On a real simple level, if we go back to the pizza business as an example, you know, their widget of the week may be two pizzas with double cheese for a special price. And so they're not just saying, come and buy pizza from us. They're holding up a specific thing and saying, here's our thing, buy it. One of the best examples that I've seen and that I know quite a bit about comes from Las Vegas and the hotel and casino business, which pretty much everybody offers the same thing, a place to come and lose a lot of money and have a good time doing it with a lot of lights and pretty girls. That's the hotel and casino business in Las Vegas. And some years ago, an entrepreneur took over the worst and last hotel on the Strip and had to find a very different way to get people to come and stay in that hotel and gamble in that casino. And he didn't have a tremendous amount of money at the time to do advertising and marketing with. So the conventional ways that Las Vegas hotels market themselves, television and billboards and full-page magazine ads, all of that was pretty much out for him. And so he sat down and he turned the hotel business and the casino business in Las Vegas into a very specific widget that he could hold up and people could see and identify and get a grip on and understand and be attracted by. Now, let me describe his widget and ask yourself if you would respond to it, presuming that you were convinced it was real, and whether or not it could save even a dying hotel, which it did, and I believe it could again. The widget that he developed, he says to you, give me $396 and I'll give you 2 nights, 3 days in my hotel in one of the deluxe suites. There'll be a bottle of champagne waiting for you when you arrive. You can have unlimited drinks the entire time you're here, whether you are gambling or not. Even if you're sitting in one of the lounges and enjoying the entertainment, you pay nothing more for your drinks. And most importantly, for your $396, I'm going to give you $600 of my dollars to gamble with in my casino. And I'll make the point for those of you that are amateur gamblers, this is not match play money, this is real money. And when you spend it in his casino, for example, if you bet a dollar of the money you're given on an even money bet and you win, they take the dollar of the hotel money and they give you a dollar of real currency. And so you are literally able to cash out this money and come out of the place a winner if you happen to be so fortunate, and it does happen. And so his offer includes the room, it includes the drinks, it includes some extras like the champagne and souvenir dice and show tickets and so forth, and it includes $600 of money to gamble with while you are at his casino. This widget has turned that little hotel, which at the time that this started was on a Motel 6 level, into one of the largest and fastest growing hotels on the Strip in Las Vegas. It's called Bob Stupak's Vegas World, and you have probably seen, because they now do use full page magazine advertising as part of their media mix, you've probably seen their ads for this widget in Parade, in Sports Illustrated, in Playboy, in dozens and dozens of magazines and newspapers all across the country. And he fills his rooms by selling this widget. It is really the business that he is in, is the business of selling this widget. He doesn't advertise any other type of accommodations. He doesn't bother advertising his hotel just as a hotel. He concentrates all his efforts and all his energy and all his resources on selling this widget. And there's a couple of very interesting side points. First of all, he runs his hotel at between 90 and 110% occupancy on a consistent basis as a result of these widgets. Generally, there's overflow, and he's bought a second hotel off of the Strip and runs shuttle buses to get the people back and forth when he does overflow. But even more interesting, his widget has provided him with a cash flow advantage in this business that no other hotel or casino has. These packages are prepaid. you buy your $396 package today, but you may not actually make reservations and go to the hotel until a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, many people even longer than a year from now. And so in the interim, what he has done is exchanged your $396 for a certificate, a piece of paper, which entitles you to all the benefits that I've described. He now has your $396 in a bank account earning interest during the time that it is not redeemed. If you study that example closely, and there's a copy of his ad included in your kit, if you study that example closely, you see that a fairly mundane and ordinary business, the hotel business, and even the hotel casino business, I don't know how many there are in Las Vegas, but there are hundreds that operate in a, shall we say, ordinary way, has been turned into a totally different business. Again, just like in the Giorgio's example, a different business was invented within the business, and that new and different business became the widget that was sold to the public. And that's exactly the thinking process that you need to go through. One of the things that you are starting to see smart marketing attorneys do, and perhaps there's one in your city who's advertising in your newspaper, is offering their services in a package. And the most common example of that is you'll see an ad that says incorporate, or corporation formed, $99 or $129 or some fairly low set fee. It's very attractive marketing technique because people are always afraid of the open-ended attorney bill and, gee, what is this going to cost me? And so they have created a widget, the incorporation, and offered it at a fairly low cost, and in their case, as important, a fixed cost. Now, once the client comes in and the relationship is formed, of course, there's annual meetings, there's all sorts of forms and maintenance work that has to be done on that corporation, and, of course, all the other legal services that you know very well are involved when you are in business. There really are three reasons to have and to use widgets and base your marketing on them. One is certainly to attract new customers, what you're calling trial customers, with a very attractive free or low-cost offer so that those people have a pleasant experience and then become permanent customers. A second reason is to sell more and to sell more frequently to past and present customers by continually coming up with new and different widgets and offering them to people who are predisposed to purchase from you because they've had a previous satisfactory experience. And the third reason, which affects both of the other two, is to move from the vague to the specific, to have something that everybody can understand and grab onto that you promote. Earlier, when we said that you may have had unpleasant experiences or unsuccessful experiences with the media, with the tools that we talked about, like Yellow Pages, direct mail, and ValPak coupons, one of the reasons why those tools do not perform for people is because they use them to advertise very vague nothings rather than very specific things, widgets. And so when you get this habit, this skill of putting together widgets, you automatically get the benefit of being able to make your advertising media and your marketing methods work for you. You get the benefit of knowing what you're doing when you come in the morning, when you come into your business. You have a very specific thing to advertise, market, promote, sell, talk about. You are going to get more predictable results. You will be able to establish more predictable cash flow and more predictable income. And most importantly, you're going to be able to attract new customers at a lower cost. The Italian restaurant owner, using the letters that we talked about, Giorgio, is no longer in the position of wondering what his cash flow is going to be this day or this week. He has a certain percentage of his tables pre-committed weeks in advance and can accurately predict what's going to go into the cash register. I can tell you on a larger scale that Bob Stupak at his hotel no longer has to wonder what his business is going to be next weekend and how much money he's going to have in the bank on Monday. He has a certain reliable base that is very predictable weeks in advance based on the sale of the $396 packages. The attorney no longer has guesswork involved in his cash flow and his income. He knows that if he runs that ad offering the $99 incorporation widget X times this month, he's going to get Y number of telephone calls, and Z number of those are immediately going to use their credit card and are going to buy an incorporation widget. And so he can very accurately predict his income and cash flow. This changes the game of business. It changes it from insecure to secure, from unpredictable to predictable, from inconsistent to consistent, and it gives you a tremendous amount of control, present and future, over your earnings and your finances. What I'm really talking about with the development of widgets and the skill of developing widgets and the use of widgets is such a dramatic change in business that the entrepreneur's endless worry about where is the next customer, where is the next dollar, where's the next payroll coming from, can disappear. You know, I often talk about the common entrepreneurial experience of Sunday night insomnia, getting ready and worrying about what you're going to do on Monday and how you're going to meet that payroll that's coming up on Tuesday or Wednesday and what you're going to do to generate business, and really not knowing and lying there while everyone else is sleeping, trying to figure out what are you going to do next, what should you do next in order to get some business in the door. This eliminates that. It eliminates you being victimized by the media offer of the day. One of the ways that business owners often spend their money on advertising and marketing is purely based on which media representative shows up on a particular day of the week and says, hey, you should run an ad this week. All of that real loose, sloppy decision-making by default disappears when you have these widgets to market and to sell. We really dramatically change your psychological and emotional relationship to your business, and you can get peace of mind and a worry-free existence out of all this. Well, you know, the automobile business and the real estate business are two examples of businesses that have used this whole widget idea the least in the past. And it's because they didn't know how, and no one has educated them about how to create widgets. It's not as glaringly obvious in their businesses as it may be in yours and as it may be in many other, particularly retail-type businesses. Yeah, for example, it's not as glaringly obvious as if you're in a pizza business where you do two-for-one or where you do free extra topping. It's not as glaringly obvious as if you're in the men's clothing business where you do free silk necktie with every sport coat or suit, or you do an extra pair of slacks free with every suit, or you do free custom tailoring or same-day tailoring. It's just not as obvious as that for those two businesses. So we invented some very innovative widgets for those two businesses. You know, if you take the typical car dealership and you drive by in the morning, you'll see all the car salesmen lined up inside, a cup of coffee in one hand and a donut in the other, phone in neither, because they have really no reason to get on the phone and use that as a prospecting and selling tool because they have no widget to sell. If you take a look in your newspaper and you look at the automobile advertising, it is very guilty of the Me Too-ism that we talked about earlier. It is one giant blur of sameness, so that people see newspaper advertising for car dealers and they see TV commercials run by the manufacturers for cars, and they can remember something about the commercial, but they can't necessarily even remember what brand of car it was selling. That's how bad it all is. And a widget gives those salespeople something productive to do, something they can get on the phone and make things happen with. And so the widget that we invented for the automobile business is a booklet and audio cassette package for the consumer that is titled, How to Buy the Car You Want at the Best Price and the Best Financing Rates Available. And the automobile dealer and his sales representatives are able to offer this up as the widget to the consumer as a gift in order to get them to come into the dealership. It so happens that I personally am in the market for a new car. My Lincoln Continental has reached a certain age when, as much as I dearly love it, it needs to be exchanged for something new. And secondly, there is a Cadillac dealer in my area who is relentlessly pursuing, he's doing a lot of right things, relentlessly pursuing Lincoln Continental owners who have cars of a certain vintage. When I say he was doing a lot of right things, I want you to know that he was creating widgets. He was creating irresistible offers. He was using a sequence of letters, as we teach. He was offering special event nights, sports personalities there doing autographs, free gifts and premiums just for coming out to visit and take a test drive. He was doing such a wonderful job, in fact, that my marketing curiosity got the best of me, and I did go out one Friday night. And as I drove up to this Cadillac dealership, there were pre-owned Lincoln Continentals, as far as the eye could see, I would say about 200 cars there. The showroom was filled with people looking and shopping and taking test drives. And I later learned in conversation that they sold 42 automobiles that single Friday night as a result of doing all these right things. First of all, he's identified the right target so he can afford to be that relentless. And we're going to talk about that on the next tape. And having done that, his pursuit is just incredible. I mean, I get mail from this dealer every single week, and I have for well over 6 months that this mail has been coming in. I've built up an immense box of it. And now, having gone out there and visited and taken a test drive, a whole new campaign, a whole new sequence of letters starts acknowledging the fact that I've been there and have test driven a car, and gee, why haven't I responded, and what else can they do, and here's the new special offer that's going on if I do buy a car this month, et cetera, et cetera. And that kind of commitment or relentless pursuit or persistence is what's going to make the difference in today's market and in tomorrow's marketplace between survival and disaster, and what can make the difference between big success and just getting by. Even with all that, the one widget that he has missed is the widget that we have innovated for a number of automobile dealers, this how to buy the car you want at the best price and best financing rates available. And the reason that it is such a tremendous widget for the auto dealer business is that it puts the car dealer or the car salesperson in partnership with the prospective customer on his side of the desk, if you like that terminology, as an advisor and a helper and a provider of information, a provider of a public service, if you will, as opposed to someone trying to sell a car. It changes the complexion of the relationship in a very interesting and different way. Now, the exact same process works in the real estate business, and the widget invented there is the audio tape and booklet kit for the customer, the prospective customer, how to buy the home that you want for the best price and the best financing rates available. They have another opportunity to deal with a different widget, again, an audio tape and booklet widget in the case of the one that we've invented for them, which is called How to Sell Your Home for Top Dollar as Fast as You Can. And that obviously brings forth the person who has a home that they need to sell. I'd like to suggest to you that the techniques that we're talking about and the techniques that we're going to teach you throughout this kit are not only going to virtually ensure your survival in a difficult marketplace, but they are going to allow you to outshine your competition and to prosper even in tough times, because you will be one of the very few people in your marketplace and in your particular business who market smart. Throughout our time together in this kit, we are revealing to you and you are learning about all of the techniques and the strategies and the tools that are used in a situation like the car dealer with the 200 prospects there on a Friday night and 42 cars sold. And then further, if the further step is something that you choose to do and want to do, we can specifically provide to you all of the marketing documents, all the three-step letters, all the phone scripts, all of the very specific tools necessary to get that job done for your particular business. what we've done is we've defined the whole marketing process as getting the right message to the right market with the right tools, the right delivery mechanism, what we call media. And we've talked a lot about how to craft marketing messages, how to get the right message assembled. Now what we need to do is determine who we're going to deliver that message to. You know, the best possible offer made to someone who is wholly unqualified or wholly disinterested in it is not going to change that person. We've got to match our offers with the right people to receive those offers. And in fact, what we want to do in terms of targeting is we want to find good prospective customers for a business that can be reached affordably, that are likely to buy, that are able to buy, and preferably who already know of us or are likely to trust us. I'd wager that if you and I sat down and I came into your business, even though you may think what was just said sounded a little obvious, and I pinned you to the wall, that you would have a rough time enunciating to me exactly who your customer is, what that person is all about. And more importantly, you'd have a rough time showing me that the advertising and marketing you've been doing is somehow directed to reaching people who are like the customers you already have. I would wager, in fact, that you are probably guilty of what I call throw mud up against the wall marketing, where you are just putting a marketing message out there, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, and hoping that somehow the right people are going to see it, hear it, be exposed to it. The clients that I work with use a very different approach. We tackle this very differently, and our approach is designed to do one very important thing, and that is eliminate waste to the greatest degree possible. Now, I would hope that you don't like wasting money. I don't like wasting money either. In most advertising, there is some percentage of waste. P.T. Barnum used to say that he knew that half of all the advertising he did for his circuses was wasted, and gee, if he could just figure out which half that was. Well, we're all kind of in that position, and I'm not sure we can ever exactly eliminate all the waste, but we sure can eliminate a lot of it. And the way we eliminate it is by knowing as much as we possibly can about our existing customers and about the most likely prospective customers who are going to accept our message. I want to know where they live. I want to know how they live. I want to know how much money they make. I want to know what they do on weekends. I want to know what kinds of products they bought last year. I want to know what their income is. I want to know how many kids they have. I want to know what food they eat for breakfast. I want to know as much about them as people and about their desires and their fears and their emotional buttons as I possibly can. And it can be done on a very simple level and a very sophisticated level. And how sophisticated you can get sometimes varies by business and budget. An individual who owned a carpet cleaning service who was doing a lot of right things in terms of crafting messages, the things we've talked about, and then was getting them out by various media, including Valpak coupons, came to me and said, look, my coupons aren't working, my direct mail's not working, none of this is working, what's wrong? And when we examined the messages he was using, the messages were okay. So that was not the answer to why he was getting nearly zero a response to what it is that he was putting out into the marketplace. The answer had to lie somewhere else. And so I began to ask him questions about who he was delivering his message to. Who is this person who you are sending this to? Where does he live? What kind of house does he live in? What does he do? What's his income? And, of course, the owner of the carpet cleaning service had no good answers for that. He was buying his market literally by zip code, sight unseen. And in a typical seminar audience, if I ask for a show of hands of the number of people who bought markets by zip code, sight unseen, a lot of hands go up. I said, let's go take a look at your market. And so we got a map and we found the zip codes that he was using and we got in his truck and we began to drive the streets of the neighborhood. And the time, incidentally, to drive a neighborhood to get a feel for who lives there is between 5 and 7 o'clock in the evening, because that's when everybody comes home. The parents are home from work. The kids are home from school. There's activity going on around the dinner hour. And so you can learn a lot just by driving up and down the streets and taking a look at what's going on. In his case, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to immediately see why he wasn't getting very good response from his reasonably good messages. If you took a look at the homes in the zip codes that he was marketing to, the lawns were poorly kept.
Many of the lawns had old cars jacked up on them, and people were working on their cars in their driveways and even in their front lawns. There were old broken down toys and bicycles that had obviously been laying in one place for some time and had not been picked up and put away or repaired. Some of the windows of the houses had aluminum foil on them to retract heat and keep the homes cool in the summer. Dad and Mom, if they were out sitting on the porch enjoying their evening, their happy hour attire, he would be in a undershirt with a hole in it, and she would be in a T-shirt with some kind of weird saying on it, and they would both be enjoying a beer right out of a can. There were an awful lot of apartments, and guesswork says an awful lot of renters in those homes. And so you take a look at all that and you say, are these the kind of people who are likely to pay money to have a carpet cleaning service come and clean their carpets? And the obvious answer is no. They are of the income level that they are probably going to go down to the local hardware store or the Kmart and rent a carpet cleaning machine and buy some chemicals and do it themselves, if in fact they are going to do it at all. But they aren't going to call a carpet cleaning service. And so he could deliver the best marketing message. He could deliver a tremendous, irresistible offer, a great widget, to the people in that neighborhood and still get very poor response. Right message, wrong market. His example points out why you are going to hear me continually emphasize to you that you have to get the right message to the right market via the right media. You know, if you err in any one of those three areas, you short-circuit the whole process, you're guaranteed to waste money, and you are likely to have an abject failure of a marketing effort. Well, he obviously should have picked a better market, a better target market than he did. To be specific, he should have targeted the delivery of his message to people who, as we said, are likely to buy carpet cleaning services, are economically able to buy carpet cleaning services, preferably would know of him and might have some level of trust for him in advance, and can be reached affordably. Now, that's the answer. The questions to get to that answer deal with how you pick that target market. It is science, and it can be done at various levels of sophistication, but there are basically five ways or five categories of ways that most small businesses can approach this whole issue of target marketing. The first of which is simple geographic target marketing. Now, our carpet cleaner friend did that. He took a map and he plunked his office down on the map and he drew a circle around it and he said, okay, here's the neighborhood closest to my office and here's the zip code that that neighborhood is and that's who I'm going to mail to. That is geographic target marketing. And in some cases, that is all that's necessary. But in his case, because there's an income level factor that is going to have a great impact on whether they're going to buy his service or not, he needs to do something more than just simple geographic target marketing. And that gets us to the second type, which is called demographic target marketing. Now, demographics is a fancy word for the things that we know a group of people have in common. If you subscribe to any magazine, for example, you may have taken a subscriber survey at one time or another. You didn't put your name on it. It was anonymous, but you checked off maybe whether or not you owned a VCR, how many cars you owned, did you take 1, 2, 6, 10, 12 trips last year, what income range is your head of household, that kind of thing. And that information is compiled, and it's called demographics. And when we find demographic commonalities in a group of customers, that tells us how we can get more of the same kind of customers. In the carpet cleaning example, we can draw a line, and we can say that people who earn below X dollars a year are unlikely to buy carpet cleaning services, and those who earn more than X dollars a year are more likely to buy carpet cleaning services. Now, with that piece of information, we can make some demographic decisions about who we want to target market. And we could make them on a very simple level, like I did with him, by driving from neighborhood to neighborhood until we identified a neighborhood geographically close to his office where it looked like the people were of a proper and appropriate income level. If we wanted to be and could afford to be a lot more sophisticated and scientific, we could call in a mailing list broker and we could sit down with that list broker and say, we want to get a list of people who live somewhere within this geographic area and who have the following characteristics. Their head of household or total household income is between X and Y. They have a MasterCard or a Visa. If we wanted to get real fancy, they subscribe to Home Beautiful magazine or they subscribe to Good Housekeeping magazine. We could ask for all those kind of choices, what are called selects in the direct marketing business, and we could get very, very, very specific if we wanted to, whatever level of specificity and sophistication is called for based on what we're selling. To sell carpet cleaning services, we don't need to be super specific. If we were selling super expensive crystalware for the home that comes from Tiffany's and that is a $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 ticket item, we might want to get very, very, very specific in that selection process. And what we're doing is matching geographic and demographic target marketing to come up with a list of people that it makes sense for us to go to with our message. Privacy is just about dead in this country, thanks to those of us in the direct marketing business. We have access to just incredible types of information. And you can look in your Yellow Pages under mailing lists or under list brokers, and you're going to find people right there in your own area who specialize in supplying marketers with different types of lists and mailing lists and demographic and geographic information. And they'll come out and sit down with you, and you can have meetings with these people and quiz them about what they can do and can't do and what they might suggest, as a matter of fact, in terms of lists that would work well for your business and for your widgets and for your marketing messages. That doesn't mean you have to accept their opinion, but you can at least look at their opinion and think about it. There may be only a few of these people in your immediate area. There are thousands of people in the mailing list business on a national level, and there are literally hundreds of thousands of different lists that can be rented for one-time use either as is or can be mixed and matched with other lists in the industry. It's called merging and purging. You can take two or three or four lists and rule out the duplicates or choose just the duplicates. You can do just about anything with those lists that you want. And so if you can tell a professional in the list business who you want to reach, it comes back to really knowing who our customer is and knowing then who our prospective customer is. To the degree of specificity that you can describe the person you want to reach, they can deliver you a list of exactly those people. If you want to get a feel for all that, I'll give you a little direct marketing industry inside information. There is a massive directory called the Standard Rate and Data Service that is published each year and updated on a monthly basis that those of us in the direct marketing business subscribe to it. And in there is listed virtually every mailing list that's available and a lot of information about it. How many people are on it? How many are male? How many are female? How many are between certain ages? How much did they spend to buy what it is that they bought that got them on the list in the first place? And other types of demographic information. Now, when I tell you that this directory has every imaginable kind of list and buyer and prospect, I really mean there. You can find people who subscribe to just about any type of magazine or newsletter on different lists. If they've bought diamonds, if they've bought automobiles, if they've bought stereos, if they've bought a certain kind of book, if they've gone to a certain kind of seminar, you name the transaction, the commercial designation, and you're going to find lists. If you want parents of twin boys, parents of twin girls, parents of midgets, parents of tall people, parents of kids who play basketball, parents of kids in elementary school, parents of kids in junior high school, parents of kids in college, any kind of parent breakdown you want, for example, it exists, and the same kind of breakdowns exist in every group. Now, you can get a feel for all this free. Most main city public libraries stock one-year-old directories of SRDS, and most of the information in there is not outdated at all, except perhaps for the quantity of the list. And so you can go to the library, and you can explore. It's a very easy directory to use, and it's very well cross-referenced. So if you have in your mind the kind of people you're looking for, you can find all the different kinds of lists that may have those people on them. And then you can talk intelligently to those list brokers that are listed there or to your local broker about some of the lists that may provide the names that you want. Now, if you need any specific help beyond this with list selection or list acquisition, you're welcome to call me, call my office at the numbers that are provided in your kit. This is one of the things that we do help people with on a consulting basis. What we're talking about here is being able to go park the Goodyear blimp right over top of the home and the driveway of somebody who owns a car with tires that are threadbare, about to blow out any day now, someone who is going to have to go buy a pair of tires. And for the 3 or 4 days before that happens, every time he walks out the door of his house to pick up the newspaper or get in his car to run down to the store to get a carton of milk, he looks up and he sees the Goodyear blimp tethered directly over his car. That's what target marketing enables you to do. That's what we're talking about. Okay, now so far we've talked about, number one, geographic target marketing. Number two, demographic target marketing. And number three, what's most commonly used is a mix of those first two, geographic plus demographic. A fourth type of target marketing is affinity target marketing. Now, you may be most familiar with this, although you may not have stopped and thought about it, through your credit cards. You may very well in your wallet have a MasterCard or a Visa card that is what in the industry is called an affinity card. It may have the logo of your favorite football team on it. It may have the Boy Scouts of America logo on it. If you or your son is involved in Boy Scouts, you may have gotten one of those. It may have a nonprofit association, the Save the Bald-Headed Wolves Association, and it's got a little picture of a wolf on it. There are thousands and thousands of different affinity credit cards, and what happens is each time that the card is used, a penny or 2 pennies or some percentage point of the charge activity goes to the affinity organization. And people like to have these affinity cards because they identify with whatever organization or symbol is on the card. Affinity means that we have a relationship, that we identify with one another, and there's a relationship there. And so affinity target marketing says that you're going to take a look at what you have or what you belong to or what you're involved with that you might be able to use in affinity marketing. I just had a conversation with a fellow in the real estate business who has 2 twin boys, and he's identified that that's very interesting to people and that people talk to him about it and that some people are identifying him as, oh yeah, you're the real estate fellow with the 2 twin boys. And he's astutely identified that he may be able to make something out of all that, but until we had the conversation, he didn't know exactly what. Well, he has an opportunity to do affinity marketing. He has an opportunity to, through various means and mechanisms, identify the names and addresses of other parents of twins in his market area and tailor his communications to those parents, identifying himself as a fellow parent of twins. He may even want to have some of his marketing documents, his sales letters, or his advertising actually done, including pictures of his twin boys, or even, quote, quote, written by his twin boys. That's affinity marketing. Some more common examples are any organization you belong to. If you belong to the local chamber of commerce, if you belong to a Kiwanis club, a JC's club, a Toastmasters club, any kind of civic group, if you're active in the Republican or Democratic Party, all of those are affinity groups, and it gives you an opportunity to tailor your marketing to all of the other members of those groups. Dear fellow member of, dear colleague, that kind of thing. Now, those are the first 4 methods of target marketing. The 5th is quite different, and it's the most often overlooked one. It is literally a gold mine. It is acres of diamonds right in your own backyard. This target market is your past and present customers. This target market is the only one that clearly fits all of the criteria that we established before. They can be reached affordably. You have their names, addresses, and telephone numbers. You don't have to rent them. You don't have to buy them. You already own this asset. They are likely to buy because they have had previous satisfactory experiences with you. They're able to buy. They were able to buy before. They're able to buy again. And they already know of you and are likely to trust you. They represent the perfect target market. Now, in the mail order industry, which is the industry that should understand direct marketing and the kinds of things that we're talking about more than any other industry, it is an axiom. It's an industry insider joke. And it is a fact that most mail order companies err in under-marketing to their own customers. They're busy mailing catalogs and solicitations to new people and not mailing to their own customers often enough, offering them new products, new services, and new widgets. The same thing that's true, ironically enough, in the mail order industry is true for just about every business. Just about every business grossly underuses this asset, does not get near the value it should get from this asset because it does not contact this target market frequently enough. Now, you have to ask yourself, why would a business not contact this particular target market, its own past and present customers, often enough. Why does this error exist on such a widespread basis? Well, it takes us all the way back through everything we've been talking up until now. The reason that the frequency of contact is not good and is not enough is because there are no good reasons to prompt the contact. There's no unique selling proposition. There's no continuous development of new and different irresistible offers. And there's no continuous development of new and different widgets. If unique selling propositions, irresistible offers, and widgets are continually being developed, refined, tried, old ones dropped, new ones added, there's always lots of reasons to get in touch with these past and present customers and keep them informed of the new and different things that are available to them. With those reasons, the contact becomes easy to do and becomes effective. Without those reasons, the contact is hard, it's forced, and it's uncomfortable for both the marketer and the customer on the other end, and it doesn't work very well. Okay, let's talk about homework assignments. One homework assignment, which we talked about a little while ago, is getting out your stack of 3x5 cards and sitting down and beginning to do the thinking and the brainstorming processes necessary to create great marketing messages. The second homework assignment, which is going to help you do that and help you fully understand all of the concepts that we've talked about so far, is to take the book that's in your kit titled The Ultimate Marketing Plan and begin to spend some serious time with it. And here specifically is what I would suggest to you. An hour every morning, and if you have to get up an hour earlier, get up an hour earlier, and an hour in the evening before you go to bed. Spend some time reading and studying this book. You'll be through it in 3 days at that rate, and you will have gleaned all of the principles and concepts that are important to understand from the book in that period of time. It's going to flesh out the things that we have talked about so far and gone over so far so that you have a full and complete understanding and really are able to use them and are able to do the thinking that's necessary. Then the next book that you should move on to is also in your kit, and it's titled The Ultimate Sales Letter. And it is going to keep pace with where we're going to go next in the kit, the actual development and use of marketing documents and marketing media, specifically about how to develop the very effective Yellow Pages ad that you need, how to develop the three-step letters which you need, and the ValPak or money mailer type coupons, which is the third way for you to attract lots of new customers at a very low cost. I want to talk to you a little bit more about these homework assignments. Talk about the 3x5 card process first. I want you to know that I'm pretty confident you're thinking about skipping that step, about not doing that. It sounds a little bit like work, doesn't it? And you were kind of hoping that I was just going to, on the tape, tell you three things that you could do with one telephone call or a one command to an underling and be done with this whole thing. And it's important for us to get beyond that so that you can get in and always be in control of your new customer flow. This 3x5 card thinking process is very, very important. And I'm going to insist that you do it. And I want you to do it not later, not next week, not when you get around to it, but in fact this week. And I suggest to you that you do it this Saturday. And to get the thoughts started and to get the process going, why don't you go down to the library this Saturday with your stack of 3x5 cards, where you can access Yellow Page directories from different cities all across the country. You can access the previous week's newspapers from different cities all across the country. And you can access any number of magazines. And you can look at all of the different advertising that has been done by different companies in your industry, in your type of business, and in compatible or similar types of businesses, and begin to get your thinking process going to jumpstart the flow of ideas onto those 3x5 cards by taking a look at that entire wealth of other people's advertising ideas and expenses. When you leave the library Saturday, you should be leaving with a hefty stack of written on 3x5 cards, not unwritten on 3x5 cards. And you should have developed on those 3x5 cards a lot of facts and features about your business, your products, and services. A lot of emotional benefits about your business, products, or services. What the people get as a result of those features. What your customer derives out of all of that. A lot of ideas for widgets, for irresistible offers, for marketing messages. And I want you to stay there and work on this as long as it takes. We're only talking about one Saturday out of your entire life to get this process started, so it's not like I'm asking you to give blood. But I do want you to stay there, even if you're the last one to leave the library, and exhaust those resources and really make that time productive for you. Because that stack of 3x5 cards is going to be reshuffled and reused for many weeks and months to come as you get more adept at developing marketing messages, unique selling propositions, irresistible offers, and widgets. Beyond that, what I'd like you to start doing is taking advantage of the wonderfully expensive education that exists all around you. And that education is getting your hands on all of the marketing documents, the advertising, the sales letters, whatever, that is put out into the marketplace by your competitors, as well as by similar or compatible companies, keeping all of this in a file and reviewing it on a monthly basis to get ideas that you can add to your 3x5 card system. You know, these companies, as you well know, because you're spending money too, are spending thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars on talent and production to put all this material out into the marketplace. And for you, it can serve as a free, continuous education and creative consultation, a source of new ideas. For most small business, there's a pretty standard group of delivery media, which is, as we said before, the Yellow Pages, which, done properly, consistently delivers break-even to a 3 or 4 times to 1 ratio of money. And so it is also a defensive type of ad mechanism. All your competitors are there. So it really is an essential for most businesses. Second are the 3-step letter campaigns, which are going to deliver you your greatest bang for your buck and are the most controllable. And third are the coupon decks, the Valpaks or the money mailers. And those 3 media are the ones you are going to use to begin with and probably continue to use most during the entire time that you are in business to deliver your messages to given target markets. There is sort of a formula that applies to these 3 media tools. The Yellow Pages ad should be in the most used Yellow Pages book for your immediate geographic area. In some places, that's going to be the main city book. In some places, that's going to be a suburb book. One good way to find that out is to survey your existing customers about what Yellow Pages book they use. You want more customers that are like the customers you already got, so find out which Yellow Pages book they use. That tells you what Yellow Pages book you need to be in most.
This is the end of side 1. Please turn the cassette over for the beginning of side 2.
Some businesses find that they can profitably be in multiple Yellow Pages books. Unfortunately, that's more of an experimentation process, and you begin to do that as what I call luxury marketing, when there's a certain amount of dollars that you have available that you want to spend trying things. But if you're not at that stage, you pick the Yellow Pages book that is most used in the immediate geographic area around your place of business. The 3-step letter campaigns, most small businesses seem to be most comfortable and most effective doing target mailings to 1,000 to no more than 3,000 prospective customers and working what you might call a farm or a core group of those 1,000 to 3,000 people with a sequence of communications over a period of time. So as you look at who am I going to mail to and what lists are available, you ultimately want to winnow that list down by either geographic considerations or demographic considerations into a list size of 1 to 3,000. He picked a couple of neighborhoods that were in close geographic proximity to his restaurant that via drive-thrus indicated that they would be at least of the income and sophistication level that they would be dining out at least occasionally at something better than a Denny's. And then within those zip codes, and then within the cross street designations within those zip codes, he went to homeowners and married homeowners. And those were his list choices. and got it down to a couple of thousand names and worked those 2,000 names. Marketing businesses instead of homes. The same principle applies. He wants to do some geographic choices, and normally it's going to be proximity to the business. He may have some special purpose designations. You know, if he has a particular kind of copier that maybe makes blueprints, and a lot of shops don't have that, then he's certainly going to want within his geographic group to include everybody who could use copies of blueprints. So he's going to want all the architect firms, he's going to want all the engineering firms within that group. If he doesn't have that kind of copier, but he has a copy that maybe is, he has a piece of equipment that maybe is super high speed and collates thousands of pages at a time into booklet form, then he's going to want to figure out what kind of businesses within that geographic area could most use that service. And that might be law firms and small publishers and whatever. So he's going to pick the businesses that he markets to that way. If he needs to narrow his list more, he might do it by size of business. He might do it by industrial SIC code, which is a universally used mailing list mechanism. He might do it by the ability to get the names of the owners so he could mail to John Smith instead of to the business name. There's all sorts of selection processes he could go through to get that list down to the number that he wanted to concentrate on. To go back to that chiropractic example, just briefly, some of the selection criteria beyond geographic that you want to use, or that those doctors will typically use, will be type of employment, will be numbers of cars owned by the family. The more cars, the more likelihood of an auto accident, the more likelihood of a personal injury case. So if I can only mail to 1,000 homes, I'd rather mail to 1,000 homes with teenagers and three cars each than I would mail to 1,000 homes with only one car each. I'd rather mail to a middle age group than an older age group because they drive more. They're on the roads more. The odds of them having an automobile accident are greater. If I choose my occupations right, I choose people who work perhaps in blue-collar occupations where they're likely to do a lot of heavy lifting and moving boxes and equipment and stuff around, which increases the likelihood of an at-work back injury. So I'm narrowing my list and choosing who I'm going to mail to based on the odds of them having the need for what it is that I do. Well, I can go further and tell you another story, and I want to put the disclaimer that it can't be done in all areas and that it is a little controversial as a technique, but it does demonstrate how clever you can get with this. In some areas, there are chiropractors who are sending their staff people or hired people or whatever down to the police departments or the motor vehicles division and getting current information of very recent auto accidents and then beginning their three-step letter campaign to those people within their geographic circle who have had an auto accident within the last week. I know of one chiropractor who is using Federal Express delivery as a mechanism to get his letters and his information to those people because they have such a known timely need and are definitely going to be choosing some kind of a healthcare provider within a matter of days. And so the timeliness of the contact is critically important. Well, the response rate on that kind of a program can run 70, 80, 90% of the people that you contact because you have so tightly matched your widget with that market. I had a client for many years who owned several print shops, and I would be continually seeing a job going out and saying, hey, tell me about that company. What do they do? What else do they buy from you? What are they involved in? And he would know nothing about those companies, those clients. And it caught him one time very blatantly. He had a client who came to him and got all of his letterhead printed there and all his envelopes and his business cards and little flyers and those kind of jobs and had been coming to him for several years. And one day that client came in and proudly presented my printer friend with a free copy of his new, beautiful, full-color 48-page catalog for all his products, which he had had printed by another printer and had spent God knows how much money getting it done and just wanted this printer to see it. And my printer friend said to him, gee, why didn't you come to me to get that done? And the customer said, but I thought all you did was stationary. All he had ever gotten done there was stationary. He identified that printer in his mind as the place he goes to get his stationary. And because this printer had never probed and found out that what this guy's business was a mail order business selling health and safety products. And the guy went through huge numbers of catalogs and full color catalog sheets and product postcards. My printer friend was getting maybe $5,000 a year in printing business from this client. The guy was spending $500,000 a year on printing, and he never got any of it simply because he never got to know what that customer's business was all about. To go back to the chiropractor, one of the things that we teach chiropractors to do is to get out to business and industry in their area and provide free training to the employees to help them prevent injuring their backs at work. And as a result, they get good PR, they make contacts with the business owners, they make contacts with the employees, they get referrals, they get patients. So the more you know about your customers, then the more of a personal level relationship you, and if you have salespeople, your salespeople are able to develop with the customers, the more opportunities you'll find to do business. If you're marketing business to business, if your customers are other businesses, then you can certainly say to them, hey, make sure that you provide us with your brochures, with literature, with information about what it is that you do, because we're in touch with all sorts of people, and if we can refer business to you, we'd like to do that. You can also ask to be put on their mailing list so you receive everything that they send out to their customers and to their prospects, and you'll learn a lot about their businesses that way. If you're dealing with consumers, say as a retail store, you're going to want to identify in your own mind and then implement several key types of information that you can track about people. Let's use the shoe store example. One of the things that shoe store owner ought to make sure that his salespeople do when they write up a receipt for a customer is put the shoe size on the sales slip of what shoes were bought. Now let's say that the shoe store owner takes on a whole new line of kids' athletic shoes. Well, he's going to want to mail to the parents, to the people who have been buying kids' shoes. There's no point in mailing to people who've been in there and done business with them 5 or 6 or 7 times and never bought kids' shoes. Why waste the mailing? And so that might be a critical piece of information for him. If you're running a florist shop, what would be critical information for you? You know, you might want to try birthdays. You might want wedding anniversaries. You might want to segment your list and identify just the male customers who only come in on Fridays, you know, so that you could devise Friday specials for that list to try and increase their use. I don't know. You have to know because it's your business, but you need to identify 2 or 3 key things that you want to compile about all of your customers and be able to sort your customers by. I group those 3 that we talked about as in the essential first tier, the yellow pages, the 3-step letters, and the Valpak type coupons. Then once you've mastered and are using and implementing those, or in a few rare cases in substitute of one of those, you might move to the second tier. And there are 2 media tools that I put in the second tier. One of those is small ads in newspapers, either your daily metropolitan newspaper or your weekly small town paper. And by small ads, I mean ads that are not designed to tell a complete story, but are only designed to get the telephone to ring, to get, if you will, your interested prospect to raise his hand and say, yes, that sounds like something I'd be interested in, tell me more, so that you can either invite that person into your place of business over the telephone with a telephone script, or in most cases, collect that person's name and address and telephone number when he responds to the small ad, and then begin to follow up on that prospect with a 3-step letter campaign, much the same as, and in some cases exactly the same as, the ones that we would already have designed. We're still selling the same USPs and offers and widgets. We're just not totally describing them in the ad. We're just saying enough so that somebody would have interest sparked and would call and ask for more information. Well, the 3 main media in the third tier are billboards, radio, and television. And what they have in common is that they are much more useful as image-type advertising, the kind that we pretty much discredited earlier in this program, than they are for direct response. And in fact, they are very effective for that. If you want to build name recognition in a hurry, it's hard to beat these three media. And so what we tend to use them for, by grouping them in the third tier and delaying the use of them until we have what I call luxury marketing dollars available, we use them to strengthen the effectiveness of everything else we are doing. If you're going to be doing a lot of tier one and tier two marketing in a given geographic area, you may very well find it a big advantage to have a few billboards up in that same market area so that now when people receive your mail, they receive your ValPak coupon, they recognize the name, they recognize the identity of the business. Radio and TV is used much the same way. So it's a help, a booster shot, if you will, to the other types of marketing. I don't think it is very effective for most small business as a substitute means of marketing. As some general rule of thumbs, I would say that if you have an advertiser who is prepared to do television and radio, that in a major market, he's got to be prepared to spend $30,000 to $40,000 a month to have some impact. In a lesser area, a minor market area, he may be able to function with a half, maybe even a third of that money and be able to have some significant impact in terms of how to use it most effectively. The first caveat is that most TV advertising and most radio advertising, like most advertising in general, is bad for all the reasons that we've already talked about. It doesn't have a unique selling proposition. It doesn't sell a widget. You know, a car dealer runs a TV commercial and says, "Hi, I'm Al the car dealer, and I stand here next to a mule and I sell Chevys." Well, you know, there's no USP there. There's no real reason to respond to that ad, and there's no direct response mechanism. There's no toll-free number. There's no widget that's being sold, so there's no way to track the response. So the first caveat about getting results from all this is to use the same things we've been teaching about the media that we favor for this media also. You got to have a widget. You got to have a USP. You got to have a great marketing message to drive the advertising. Then there's some other kind of creative strategies that you can sometimes apply to get bigger bang for your buck with media like TV, radio, and billboards. One is that you use that advertising to advertise other advertising. Let me explain what I mean. If you have a really great Yellow Pages ad, for example, that you're spending a fair amount of money for and that does a terrific job of telling your story, it delivers the USP, it delivers all the benefits of doing business with you, it offers a widget, it's a really good ad. There's no way you can put that ad on a billboard and have somebody be able to read it in the time that they drive past the billboard. There's no way you can deliver that ad in a 30-second spot on the radio. But what you can do is use the billboard and the radio spot to drive people to look at your ad in the Yellow Pages. The whole radio spot or the whole TV spot can be built around, here's five reasons why you've got to turn to page 356 of the Yellow Pages and look at Al Schwartz's shoe store ad immediately. You know, and you can use the ads to drive people to the other media that do a better job of telling your story. Well, radio works well in many cases at promoting events, and retailers will often create an event. You've seen auto dealer tent sales, for example, that are very common. In our market area, we have a company that is a clothing wholesaler that supplies all of the independently owned retail clothing stores, I think, throughout the state of Arizona with major brand name clothes. And once a year, they open their doors for 4 days to the general public. And they have an annual clearance sale of all of the unsold stock. It's all brand new. And they advertise that exclusively on the radio. And they really blitz on the radio for the week prior to those 4 days. And then they have that 4-day sale, and it's over. And they do a tremendous amount of business as a result of that. And they've been doing it for years, so it really has gotten to the point that many of their customers expect it to happen and are listening for it to come again. And word-of-mouth advertising, then, when it does start happening, you know, somebody will hear it on the radio and say to somebody else in the office, "Hey, do you know anything about that clothing liquidation sale?" And there's been enough people who have been through it who will say, "Oh, yeah, I went last year, and it was a great deal. I got this, I got that." And so it works very well for them. And if you can stage appealing, attractive events, real legitimate sales, that people perceive to be legitimate sales. You may be able to use radio very effectively in that way. Another way that radio can work very effectively is if you tie the radio personalities in as spokespersons for your business product or service, which is not as difficult as you might think, and in many local markets it's quite easy. It is a strategy you're familiar with hearing done by the weight loss companies. At least two of the major franchisors of weight loss clinics make a regular practice of getting some of the local radio personalities to come in, be customers, lose weight, and then talk about their experience as the commercials. And the endorsement of that personality and the involvement of that personality makes those commercials work infinitely better than they would if they were just done as plain commercials with an ordinary professional radio voice. There are, you'll see 30-second spots and 60-second spots. You'll also see what you identified as shows that look like commercials, 30-minute long-form commercials. They're generally called infomercials that sometimes look like a talk show, sometimes look like a game show, and sometimes look like a documentary, but really are sales presentations for a particular product. All of those things tend to make marginal profit on the initial sale, and that's something that's very important for everybody to know. You may see a $195 widget being sold on television, and literally the profit being made is $2 or $3. The main virtue, however, is that customer lists are being built at a very rapid pace at no cost, and that's predominantly why most of those companies are in that business and use that media. But it can work very well for seminar promotions in a local area. It can work well for fairly expensive products that are demonstrable. Kitchen gadgets right now are doing very well in long-form infomercials, and there's no reason why that couldn't be adapted on a local basis. I do know chiropractors who have their own local half-hour infomercials and buy local TV time and do very well. In direct mail in general, you'll hear response percentages quoted to you of 1%, 2%, 0.5%, 0.25%. And depending upon what's being done in direct mail, all of those response percentages are good, and money can be made with all of those kinds of response percentages. There are major national direct mail campaigns being run right now on the basis of 1/8 of 1% response rate, and profits are being made at that level, and everybody's happy, and the person who put the promotion together is generally considered to be a genius. With the type of matching techniques that we've talked about that you have an opportunity to do that some large national marketers may not, where you really know your customer and you have targeted properly with geographic, demographic, all of the targeting mechanisms we've talked about, so that you are perfectly matching a message with a known-to-be-interested recipient, your odds of getting a lengthy message read and paid attention to go way up. The odds are way in your favor. And as a result, you can sometimes get phenomenal results either in terms of response percentages or in terms of dollars back for dollars spent. And sometimes one doesn't necessarily have to do with the other. You know, if you're selling a $25,000 item, you don't need a 40% response rate to do very well financially from a mailing. You may need a 1% or a 0.5% response rate. On the other hand, if you're selling a $25 item, you may very well need a 10 or 20% response rate to do well. I'll just give you one example off the top of my head. One of my companies, which publishes a lot of my books and cassettes and those type of products, markets quite a bit to the National Speakers Association, where I am known. Not known by all of the members, certainly person to person or handshake to handshake, but known of, much the same as your business by name might be known of in its market area, or a company like MCI or AT&T is known to all of us. And we have achieved, not just once, but repetitively, with long-form sales letters, response percentages of 20, 30, even 40% from that relatively small list. And we've done it because that list fits the criteria of a perfect target market that I laid out for you several times earlier in these tapes. And so the closer your match is, the more effectively you can use this type of marketing. I want you to know that what I'm about to tell you can, in fact, happen for just about any type of business given enough thought to make it happen. Listen carefully to a few of these examples. For my book company and my newsletter company, we recently did a mailing to a very carefully selected target list of 1,900 prospective customers. In a 15-day period, we've brought in over $68,000 in revenue as a result of that mailing. Well, you can do the math yourself. I don't care how many pages were in the mailing and how much postage we spent to send it out. There's a lot of money left over between the cost of that mailing to 1,900 people and $68,000. That kind of response in terms of speed, in terms of dollars, and in terms of response percentages happens over and over again in our business. And we are able to translate it to all sorts of other types of businesses. Let me give you a couple small but nevertheless significant examples. One is a chiropractic practice using a three-step letter campaign to promote a patient appreciation day, where they would give free services away to all their past patients and to all those patients' family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, anybody that they wanted to bring in with them. The chiropractic practice was working with a universe of about 2,000 names to send the letters out to. And over a three-week period, they sent their three-step sequence of letters promoting this one patient appreciation day. And on that patient appreciation day, they had over 120 newly introduced people, relatives, friends, coworkers, neighbors of the patients come through that practice, over 120 of them, and over 40 of them became new patients in the weeks to come. Now, in a chiropractic practice, depending on where we are in the country, an average patient case may be worth anywhere from $400 to $1,000. If we say that each one in this case was worth $500, well, do the math and tell me what that mailing was worth. In another case where we were promoting a pre-trade show seminar, where we were going to a trade show, there were about 3,000 people registered to attend the trade show, and we decided to promote a free seminar the day before the trade show, at which, of course, we would demonstrate our goods and services and try and do business with as many of these people who were coming to the trade show as possible. A three-step letter campaign. The first letter was 12 or 14 pages, I honestly don't remember, long, and then they got progressively shorter. But that three-step letter campaign put 1,100 of the 3,000 people in that free seminar for a full day and resulted in well over $100,000 worth of business written in an 8-hour period. Those are the kind of results that you can get, and I don't care what kind of business you're in, you can get them if you learn from the examples and the techniques that are presented in this kit and give enough thought to it. One of the biggest mistakes that people make with direct mail, and they will come and they say, well, I tried direct mail, and direct mail doesn't work for me, it doesn't work in my area, it doesn't work for my product, whatever, is they will have done one-shot direct mail. And because that's what everybody is doing, you gain a tremendous market advantage in gaining people's attention and building interest and building a relationship when you go to the same prospect with a repetitive related sequence. And as you study the examples in your kit, you'll see that almost without exception, the second letter in every sequence acknowledges and refers to the first letter, and the third letter acknowledges and refers to the second and the first letter. So it's almost like Dunning collection letters are done in a negative way. We're using that technique in a positive way. And that sequence is extremely important. The next thing on the list would be the existence of a formula. There are certain formulas, and they are all in the Ultimate Sales Letter book, that you want to adhere to when you structure these letters. It's not just a matter of sitting down and writing willy-nilly anything you want to say about your business or your product. There are structures that work, and just about anything outside those structures cannot be relied on to work. One of the most common and one of the easiest to learn is called problem, agitate, solve, and very simply it means you set up the existence of a problem that your reader has, and you get him emotionally worked up about the effect of that problem on him, and then you whip out the answer to the problem that is going to solve it instantly and quickly and easily for him, and you become the hero. And he's very excited about that and responds to you. That's one of a number of the formulas that are in the book. And when you learn the formulas, writing becomes easy. You may think, geez, I have trouble writing a grocery list that makes any sense right now. But with these formulas, you become a good sales writer. You might not necessarily win a grammar award. You might not necessarily be able to write a great novel. But you'll be able to write great letters that sell and that get response just by following the formulas. Most of the great copywriters I know, incidentally, are all self-taught. They didn't go to college. They don't have a degree in advertising. They don't have a degree in psychology, and many of them never worked in an advertising agency before they began writing direct marketing copy. And many of them in my league are paid $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, even $30,000, $35,000 to write and put together one sales letter or one direct mail campaign. And these are all self-taught people. They learned the hard, long way by looking at what other people were doing that worked and gradually being able to find the formulas and identify the formulas and then learn the formulas. I've shortcutted all of that agony for you and said, here's the formulas. These are the ones that work. All you got to do is pay attention to the formulas, write within the formulas, and you've got a winner. Earlier, I mentioned to you the importance of a personal look. And I will mention it again. In most cases, not in all cases, and some of the exceptions are discussed in the book, but in most cases, the most reliable look that will get results in these letter campaigns is as close to a personal correspondence look as you can get. That means plain envelopes, not an envelope with a return corner card that has the name of your business on it and screams out loudly that it is business mail and probably advertising mail. Not a label, individual addressing. Not a postage indicia, but an actual real postage stamp stuck on there with glue or spit. A real personal-looking envelope, and when you open it up, not a bunch of junky coupons and flyers, but a personal-appearing letter. This is the look that will most often get delivered by the postman and get treated well by the recipient, get opened by the recipient, and given a good chance to deliver its message. One of my colleagues and best friends and one of the highest paid direct mail copywriters in the country who has developed several direct mail campaigns that have been mailed in the hundreds of millions of copies talks about this look issue this way. He calls it the A pile, B pile theory, and his name is Gary Halbert. And Gary says that most people open their mail over a wastebasket and they literally sort A pile, B pile, and into an A pile goes bills, letters from friends, relatives, neighbors, and people they know, and things that they have paid for, like magazines or newsletters, and into the B pile goes everything else. And if you doubt this, one place to see it happen is go to a place where there are post office boxes and watch the people in the post office or in the private mail center as they take their mail out of the post office box. I've actually done it. And two out of three won't walk out of the facility without first going to the waste can and sorting their mail. And they throw a goodly chunk of it away, unopened, or at best, kind of torn open and skimmed at, and they keep and walk out of there with the A pile. Well, the busy business person in his office does exactly the same thing. Sometimes he has a secretary or an assistant who even does it for him, which is worse from our standpoint. And the person at home even does the same thing. So what we want to do is we want to be in the A pile. We want to create mail that moves its way into the A pile and has its best chance of delivering its message to the most number of people possible. And for that, we want the personal look. I want to stay on this point for just a little while longer because I want to bring to your attention something that you probably do not know. Those of us in the direct marketing industry are very well aware of it, but the general public is not so well aware of it. And when you're spending money on mailings, everyone getting to its recipient is important. It affects your response percentages. And sometimes when you get very poor response and can't figure out why, what I'm about to tell you is going to be the answer. The first thing you need to know is that, unfortunately, the folks who work in our postal system throw out a lot of mail. Yes, you heard me right. They throw out the mail, literally wholesale. And there are many cases. There's a few in my book, and the Direct Marketing Association literally has a notebook of them. And the postal system freely admits to the fact that this is going on, prosecutes when they can. There are some very well-known flagrant cases, like the case in the Bronx, New York, where an entire five-story apartment building was found stuffed floor to ceiling, an abandoned building, with undelivered mail that the postal carriers simply took and dumped there so that they didn't have to do the work of delivering it. There was a postal worker arrested in the state of Florida when they found his entire barn full of undelivered mail. There have been numerous cases of dumpsters behind post offices found with undelivered mail. Now, stop and think for a second. What kind of mail do they dare not deliver? The only kind of mail they dare not deliver is mail that there is no accountability for. Quote, quote, junk mail. mail that the postal carrier can look at and immediately know that the person getting it does not know it's coming, has no desire to receive it, and when he doesn't get it, is not going to call up anybody and complain and say, where's my mail? If it's mail that looks like they're expecting it, if it's mail that looks like it's important, if it's mail that looks like when the person doesn't get it, he's likely to complain, that is sure to be delivered. How much mail is thrown out? In a given campaign, if you were to use bulk mail and you were to use a look that is clearly identifiable as junk mail, you run the documented risk of as much as 60% of that mail winding up in a dumpster instead of winding up in the mailboxes. Now, let me just qualify this one little bit. Most of the folks who work for the postal system are wonderful, dedicated people who do their job and do their job well and take their responsibilities seriously and are to be commended for the work that they do. Certainly in many areas of the country out there, slogging through snow, rain, sleet, to quote their motto, and biting dogs, and you know, a lot of what they do is not exactly the most pleasant work in the world. But it doesn't take too many renegades, too many bad postal workers to destroy your mailing. And the more hands it's going through, if you're dropping it off at Post Office A, and then it's moving to a central sort station, and then it's going to Post Office B, and then those mail carriers are taking it out into the area, it only requires one bad guy, one grossly overworked guy who says, this batch is going in the dumpster, and you have wasted a tremendous amount of money. So the first reason that we do the look that we do is purely to get the mail delivered. If it doesn't get delivered, it has no chance to work for you. Then there's the issue of it getting opened, the A pile, B pile issue that we just talked about. The most recent survey by Dunn's, which was quoted in the Wall Street Journal, of business-to-business mail indicates that over 50% of all clearly identifiable advertising solicitations and junk mail is thrown out in the mail room. It never gets past the mail room. It never gets to the person you've addressed it to. The corporate management has given the dictum to the people who work in the mail room, throw the stuff out. I don't have time to deal with it. So let's stack up the odds of a business-to-business mailing if it's done the non-Dan Kennedy way. If it's done with bulk mail, bulk rate stamps, a junk mail look, or is clearly identified as business mail, it's got labels on the envelope that aren't addressed to an individual person. They're addressed to occupant or to Joe Executive or to the sales manager, and it arrives at a business. We could lose up to 66% of it in the mail. We could then lose 50% of the remaining percentage that gets there to the guys in the mailroom who throw it out. Now the stuff that does get moved from the mailroom goes through a secretary, and she's going to throw some of it out. So we may have 10% of our whole mailing getting there to try and do the job. Now we only get a 1% response from our whole mailing, and we say, geez, that's terrible. Really, what we got is a 10% response of the 10% that had a chance to work in the first place. We did great with the message. We just didn't get the message there. It's kind of like Gary asked us to think of it as the little salmon swimming upstream. You know, I mean, we've got to give them a boost to make sure they all get there. We want to give them all powerboats, and the way we give them powerboats is with the personal look. And it happens on a local level, it happens on a national level, and you just can't afford the false economy of mailings that save you 3 cents here and a nickel there, but never have a chance to do their job. And by using the targeting techniques that we've talked about, you no longer need the false economy of the 3 cents here and the nickel there, because you can afford to do it exactly the best way, the Cadillac way, the Rolls-Royce way that it needs to be done, because you're only mailing to people that are super well qualified to respond to your message in the first place. In the olden days of door-to-door sales, we've all heard the jokes and we've all seen in the old Bob Hope movies and some of the other old movies, the door-to-door sales guy who knows that as soon as the lady of the house opens the door, the first thing he has to do is jam his foot in the door so she can't close the door again, so that he has an opportunity to try and tell his story. Well, our letter can't be a foot in the door. It has to do that in a different way. And it does it with an attention-getting opening statement. Much like a live salesperson, the first sentence out of his mouth may very well control whether he gets to stay and tell his story or whether he gets cut short. Certainly, if you've ever done any telemarketing at all, you know that the first sentence, it determines whether you get to stay on the phone or whether that person hangs up and leaves you. The same thing is true of the letter. I call it getting from uninvited pest to invited guest in a hurry, and that's what we have to do. And I'm going to tell you a little story to illustrate how important this all is. Some months ago, I was at home, and I often work from my home office, and at this particular time, I was sitting at the kitchen counter having a glass of iced tea, and I was on the phone with a consulting client, and my back was to the sliding Arcadia door that goes out into our patio and garden, and there was a banging on that glass door, and I was on the phone, I was busy with a client, and I was annoyed that someone had got in my backyard anyway, and so I became instantly determined that I was going to ignore this pest who was banging on my door. So I didn't turn around and look. I paid no attention to this person. I continued with my telephone call, and pretty soon the banging on the door stopped, and then the next thing I know, there's banging on the front door of the house, and I ignore the banging on the front door of the house. And then this person is screaming at me to open up the door, and I ignore him, and I ignore him, and I ignore him. Finally, I turn around to look at the back door, and the entire backyard, all of the trellises and the plants and everything around our house are in flames. The entire garden is on fire. And it turns out that this person who has been banging on my door is a passing off-duty fireman who has taken it upon himself to try and deal with this problem. And we have no garden hose out in the yard. We have nothing. So this guy is trying to alert me to the fact that my backyard is on fire. And by now, the plants that are on fire are inches away from the wood trim on the house. You could slip a piece of paper between the flames and the wood trim. Well, I got to tell you, all of a sudden, this uninvited pest became a very, very welcome guest. I was happy to see this guy, and he had a hose in his hand real quick, and everything else that I was doing went by the wayside. The telephone clunked to the floor, and the consulting client was ignored for quite a period of time, and this became the focal point. Well, had he had a way to slip a note in front of me from the very beginning that said, "Your house is on fire, and I'm here to put it out," he would have got my attention right away. He would have been a very welcome guest from the very beginning. So what we've got to do with the first words out of the letter's mouth is clearly get from uninvited pest to welcome guest. And the way we do that is with a very simple device. It's an attention-getting headline that in most cases telegraphs. You know, when you write a telegram, you do it in shortened form, in abbreviated kind of shorthand, that telegraphs the promise of a very compelling benefit to the person who is reading that letter. And if that first headline does that job, it's going to get the person to read the letter. The best secret, the most reliable secret, is to instantly communicate a very desirable benefit. I can give you a great example. There's a restaurant in our area that was taken over by new management shortly before St. Patrick's Day. And they wanted to attract back a lot of old customers, and they wanted to make a big splash in the market area. And so they ran a full-page ad in the newspaper that was very copy-intensive, that told the whole story of the history of the restaurant and the new chef who had come over from wherever it is he came over, and all of the wonderful meals that were going to be there, and the 6 big-screen TVs so you could see every sporting event and whatever. But the main promotion of the ad was to a big, free St. Patrick's Day party where all the food was free and all the booze was free for 6 solid hours. They put a giant tent up in the parking lot, and they threw a giant free St. Patrick's Day. And so the headline of the ad said, "On St. Patrick's Day, we prove there is such a thing as a free lunch." And one-third of the ad was a giant coupon to bring for your free lunch. Well, I'm going to tell you something. You needed a crowbar to get in this place. I mean, they had a traffic control problem. They had the police aggravated at them. They had cars parked as far as a mile away and people walking to this thing. And in Phoenix, even in March, it's a little hot outside to be sitting in a tent in the middle of the day. But they had them there, packed deep from one end of the tent to the other, standing room only. And this restaurant has never had a marketing problem
since. It introduced itself to enough people in one fell swoop and built a mailing list instantly of all those people that they've never had a marketing problem since. Headlines and all marketing really revolves around some very basic motives and some very basic techniques. If you go to the headline examples and the section in the book, you're going to see things like there's a very classic headline format that says, "They didn't think I could, fill in the blank, but I did." Now, that headline comes from, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 35, 40, maybe 50 years ago, with a famous ad written by a man by the name of John Caples, for whom there is in the advertising industry today an award named the Caples Award for copywriting, because this ad sold tons and tons of home study piano lessons. And the headline said, "They laughed when I sat down at the piano, but not when I started to play." Well, this format plays on something that is very desirable to all of us, the desire to impress the people that we're around, to be an important person, to show off. We all want to show off at parties, at work. We want to tell the best joke. We want to have the newest joke. We want to be able to do the trick. We want to be able to pick all the football games right on Friday so that on Monday we can gloat over our coworkers. That kind of thing turns us all on. So a headline that says, "Hey, everybody laughed at me. Nobody thought I could do this. And then I stuck it to them and I did it." That gets folks real excited. And so you can apply it to just about anything. We turned it around and used it this way for another type of home study course. The headline said, "They grinned when the waiter spoke to me in French, but their laughter changed to amazement at my reply." And that was a headline for an ad that sold how to learn to speak French courses. Well, why would you want to learn to speak French? Either you're going to France on vacation, or you want to impress people when you go out to a restaurant so that you can order French food and order wine and speak to the waiter in French. And the headline summed it all up beautifully. Well, you're pushing emotional buttons, and that in and of itself is a very important point. Just about everybody believes that their business or their product, or a lot of people believe this, is not subject to an emotional sell. You know, they'll tell me, "Well, that works fine for some kind of diet plan you're going to sell in the National Enquirer, but my business has nothing to do with emotion." All businesses have to do with emotion, because the only way anybody ever makes a decision to respond is on an emotional level. And then we apply logic to make ourselves feel good about what we decided to do in the first place. But we respond first emotionally. And if you want to get attention and you want to get favorable attention, you have to operate partially using what you just called emotional buttons. And that's very important. A headline format that does that, that can be used for many, many things, is simply "Secrets of Blank Revealed." And if you want to jazz it up further, you stick a number in front of it. 49 secrets, 22 secrets, 72 secrets. Why does this work? Well, because we all, deep down inside, just like we all hope to win the lottery, even though we know we're not going to, we all deep down inside believe that there are secrets, that somebody knows some secrets that we don't know, and gee, if we just knew them, that'd make the difference. That's one of the ways that this course was sold to you, on the premise that there are marketing secrets. And it becomes a true premise. If I know something that you don't know, to you it is a secret. And so a very famous headline is simply, "Secrets of Four Champion Golfers Revealed." Well, golfers, if you happen to be a golfer, you'll freely admit to this, are the most manic people on earth about improving their golf games. Golfers will do anything. They will hike barefoot to the top of the mountain of Tibet to find the wise golfer who will tell them how to shave one stroke off their score. I mean, they will do anything to improve their golf games. And if a headline says "Secrets of Four Champion Golfers," believe me, they want to know what those secrets are. So how could a local business use that headline? Any sporting goods store could use that headline. Any country club could use that headline. Could a restaurant use that headline? Sure. Why couldn't a restaurant throw Golfer Day and invite the golf pros from the local country club to come in? They'd be there free to promote their business, and they would give a little half-hour lunchtime golf instruction seminar out in the parking lot and show you the four ways to improve your golf game. And the restaurant runs it as a promotion to attract customers to their restaurant. So that headline, "Secrets of," you can apply that to just about anything. Certainly you could use that headline in the beauty business, "Secrets of Younger Looking Skin," "Secrets Hollywood Actresses Know for Great Hair." Those types of headlines on sales letters will work fabulously well.
We had one fellow at a seminar who by the third day was thinking in headlines, and his wife has subsequently left him because he was talking in headlines, you know, so you can carry it too far, too. But I do have a zany story for you, and it is a story that demonstrates on a local level the power of a single headline and what it can do. And we have to give a tip of the hat again to my friend Gary Halbert. It's his headline, and it is a masterful example of this whole use of headlines to get attention and to play on emotions. His assignment at the time was to handle the local debut of a new perfume for a lady by the name of Tova Borgnine, who is actor Ernest Borgnine's wife. And she had planned to have a little debut party for the new fragrance at a boutique store on Rodeo Drive. And the store would hold maybe 100 people at most for this debut. And Gary said to her, well, if you want to do this on a much larger scale and get a lot of publicity, free advertising out of it, we can certainly do that. And she said, well, how large of a scale? He said, well, you need to go rent the entire ground floor of the Century Plaza Hotel. Now, if you've ever been to Los Angeles, the Century Plaza, I believe, is the largest downtown Los Angeles hotel. It is immense. And so she went and she rented the entire ground floor of the Century Plaza Hotel.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the cassette over for the beginning of side two.
And the ad that they ran in the Los Angeles Times, and I may not get this perfect word for word, but the headline basically said, famous actor's wife Tova Borgnine swears under oath that her new perfume does not contain an illegal sexual stimulant. And then the second headline said, to prove that it is safe to wear in public, Tova will give away 1,000 free bottles of the perfume at her grand opening party, everyone invited. And then the copy of the ad went on to tell the story about the perfume and about Tova and where and when the party was. Well, again, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that that headline, you know, has some real impact, but you might not know just how much impact it would have. Not only was the entire ground floor of the Century Plaza Hotel full to bursting that Friday afternoon, with police hired to handle the traffic jam outside all the way around the hotel, but Time magazine had picked up on this in one day from it being sent to the topographers at the LA Times, and they had a reporter there. All three Los Angeles TV stations had camera crews and reporters there and covered this. All major Los Angeles radio stations had reporters there. Cosmopolitan magazine picked up on it and wrote about it subsequently. Literally $1 million worth of free advertising was generated by the advertising that was paid for, that filled the hotel with women to get their free bottles of this perfume. Two major department store chains had people there to see what was going on and instantly placed orders to stock this perfume in all their stores across the country. And literally, a major business was launched by one great headline in one great ad. Dear computer hater, and the headline begins, do you hate your computer? Do you own a computer that won't do what you tell it to do? Are you afraid to buy a computer even though you know you need one? Are you confused by computer babble? Well, that headline is designed to cause immediate identification and affinity, if you will, and we talked about affinity earlier, with anybody who opens that letter who does have problems with their computer. Now, the person who's very well versed with computers is probably not going to go on and read it, but he's not the targeted customer of this letter anyway. The targeted customer is the first-time buyer, the first-time user, or the person who bought one and now is using it as a glorified typewriter and adding machine and is not getting his value out of it. And for him, this headline grabs him, and it grabs him both intellectually and emotionally, and he's going to read the letter. And I can only tell you that we're not playing games here. We have tested endless variations of with headline, without headline, with headline in regular typewriter type, with headline in bigger type, with headlines that sound like news, with headlines that don't. We've done an immense amount of testing, and now you benefit from all of that. And these particular headlines and this approach to headlines works. The reason why they are often written like news and more often like the news that you would see in the tabloids or in the New York Post or on a TV show like Hard Copy or one of those tabloid-type shows than you would see, say, in the Wall Street Journal is because those are the headlines people read. You know, one of the most successful magazines on earth is Cosmopolitan Magazine. And Cosmopolitan Magazine is successful because of the headlines that appear on its cover each month about what's inside the magazine. That is the true genius of that entire publication. And its owners will cheerfully tell you that that's what they spend the most time on, is getting those headlines right. And the headlines you see us using in this system are very much like you might see on the front of Cosmopolitan Magazine. And they jump out and they stand out and they have news value, and so they are interesting and compelling and people read them. To sum all that up, writing successful headlines, or creating successful headlines, which is probably a better term for it, relies on the same basic formulas that are in your ultimate sales letter book that then also control the body copy of the letter. And those formulas are problem, agitate, solve, which I've already discussed with you. There's a formula called winners and losers, which, to very simply explain it, tells two stories. It tells the story of a winner, and it tells the story of a loser. The third formula is what we call fortune-telling. That is making a prediction. This is very strong. People are fascinated with predictions. A real good prediction headline, for example, for a company selling fire alarms and burglar alarms on a sales letter going out to a neighborhood might be, "One home within walking distance of yours will be robbed this week." That's a very strong headline. I mean, somebody's going to read the rest of the letter to see what that's all about, and it's a very predictive, it's a fortune-telling headline. And then the fourth type of headline is a secrets of success and inside track, inside information kind of appeal. And by the way, you want to remember again that you're always dealing with basic emotional needs and buttons, the same motives that drive all of us to do just about all of the things that we ever do. We're motivated highly by fear of loss or bodily harm. We're motivated by the inverse of that, a desire for security. We're motivated by greed, various levels. But we're motivated by greed, a desire for things to be better, a desire to have things. We're motivated by ego, the desire to be important and to be perceived and treated as important. We're motivated by the love sex emotion, the desire to have someone of the opposite sex who looks up to us, respects us, appreciates us, and in some cases wants to have an intimate relationship with us. We're motivated sometimes by legacy, the desire to have something live on long after we have gone, immortality, if you will. All of the basic emotions that drive what you do and why people do the things that they do is what marketing is all about, even if you are selling a very sophisticated technological product. It's still being bought not by sophisticated technological robots, but by flesh and blood, breathing, emoting human beings like you and I, and we have to deal with them on that level. The approach I take to Yellow Pages is an approach used by some of the top Yellow Pages consultants in the country, as well as in other parts of the world. There's a consultant in Australia, New Zealand, for example, who is literally a guru of Yellow Pages advertising. And I knew of his existence, and he knew of my existence, but we had never compared notes or anything up until a couple months ago. And I got he has a course just on Yellow Pages advertising, which sells for almost as much as you pay for this entire system. And I bought it, and it's like reading my own instructions. That's how much we are in sync. So it's not that I'm totally standing alone out there, but I am contrarian. And I'll say this to you. If you look at most Yellow Pages ads, and you understand even the basic elements of what makes up an ad, they're not ads at all. They are enlarged business cards. What most people do in a Yellow Pages ad is put the same information they have on their business card in the Yellow Pages and just pay a lot of money to do that and use up a lot of space to do that. Our approach is to make it a miniaturized sales letter instead of an enlarged business card. Once you've learned how to write these sales letters and apply these formulas, yes, you have learned how to do great Yellow Pages advertising. It's just that now you are confined in the number of words that you can use. But I want to make an important point about that. Your Yellow Pages advertising rep, if you have done a really good job with a Yellow Pages ad, will stand on her head screaming and wrestle you to the ground, arguing that you have too much copy, that the type is too small, and that there's not enough yellow space. And when she's doing that, you know you're on the right track. Every time we have put double the normal amount of copy in a Yellow Pages ad, we have more than doubled the response. Every time we have given it an editorial, copy-intensive, or letter look, as opposed to an ad look, we have dramatically increased the response for that advertiser over the previous year. When you open a Yellow Pages section, you see this blur of similarity. As I said earlier, in most sections, you can cut the ads up and mix up the names and the numbers, and you haven't done any damage because everybody's saying the same stuff, and they're saying it the same way. So when you do something dramatically different in that arena, you really do stand out. And it's a very different-looking Yellow Pages ad. There's no pictures. There's no glaring logos. It is very copy-intensive and editorial, and it has a headline. And the headline says, "The four problems people have with dentists and how we've solved them." Well, if you're in the Yellow Pages shopping for a dentist and comparing one dentist against the other, that's a very interesting headline to you. Gee, are those the same four problems I have? And of course they are, and you want to know how those problems have been solved. And so you read the ad, and ultimately, of course, the solution to all four problems is to go to that particular dentist's practice where he has resolved all of them for you. It really is a very different look, and it works predominantly because it is so different. One of the worst things about normal Yellow Pages advertising is the headline. You can't have an ad without a headline. Even conventional ad agency people will tell you that an ad has a headline. That's what it has. And if you look at Yellow Pages advertising, most of them, for their headlines, use one of two things. They use the name of the business, which is worthless in terms of getting anybody to read that ad. That person is a shopper. They're not in the Yellow Pages to find your business. They go to the White Pages to do that. They're in the Yellow Pages to shop. So the name of your business is worthless. Or they'll use the location as the headline, 23rd and 5th, or Tyson's Corners, or whatever. That is not totally indefensible, because location is an element when people are shopping in the Yellow Pages. But if that's the most important, compelling benefit that you have to telegraph about your business, is where you're at, I would suggest to you, you've got a big marketing problem. There's got to be something better going on there that you would want to make number one than just where you are. So changing the headline alone and using the kind of headlines that we talk about in this kit make a measurable difference in the response to a Yellow Pages ad if you changed nothing else but. I can give you an acid test for the headlines of a Yellow Pages ad. And the same test pretty much applies to headlines used anywhere else, and it definitely applies to any headline you would use in the Yellow Pages. The test is based, oddly enough, on the National Enquirer, which, like it or not, has the widest, largest circulation of any media we can name. More people read the National Enquirer than read anything. And so some interesting things about the Enquirer, the advertising that is in the Enquirer, is some of the most expensive advertising you could possibly buy. And so if you see people repeatedly advertising in the Enquirer, you know their ads are working, or they would be bankrupt. It's that simple. Secondly, the National Enquirer's classified section has the highest readership and the highest response of any classified ad media in the world. Now, a classified ad is nothing more than a headline and a how-to-respond instruction with all the copy taken out of the middle. That's what a classified ad is. And if you look at classified ads, you'll understand that immediately. That's what they are. And so our test is to take our headline out of our Yellow Pages ad, out of context, away from everything else, and run it as a classified ad in the National Enquirer with nothing but that headline and a how-to-respond instruction, and ask ourselves, would anybody write to us? So let's take a headline from a Yellow Pages, and the headline is Sam's Bowling Alley. That's the headline. So we put it in the National Enquirer, and our classified ad reads like this: Sam's Bowling Alley, Box 3, Grand Central Station, New York, New York. How many letters are you going to get? None. There's no reason for anybody to write to you. So the ad fails, the headline fails. That's the National Enquirer test. Sam might come up with a headline for his bowling alley, 10 secret ways to add 100 points to your bowling score. Now, if we run that in the National Enquirer with Right to Box 3, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, I promise you, we're going to get some mail. And so that's a wonderful headline for a Yellow Pages ad, too. Then what has to happen in the ad? Well, to make the promise true, the ad has to offer either a free report or a free video or a free class or a free something that gives them those 10 ways to improve their bowling score when they come to Sam's Bowling Alley. Let's say he offers a free report. And so Sam gets a lot of calls and people say, send me the free report. I don't want to come in. Send it to me. Great. Sam's got a mailing list. He sends the free report. And, of course, one of the ways, the 10 secret ways that you improve your bowling score is you bowl a lot. You get in there and practice, and you bowl with better bowlers, and you join leagues. And Sam can help you do all of that. And then he includes with the report a couple of coupons for the snack bar and maybe a coupon for half-price bowling or whatever. He's going to get response. He's going to get people into his bowling alley. And he uses a three-step letter sequence now. So the ones who don't respond to letter number one, they get a letter number two. The ones who don't respond to letter number two, they get a letter number three. And he's devised a marketing system unlike any other bowling alley is using in the Yellow Pages. That's how to get biggest bang for your buck. I think anybody of average intelligence and even slightly above average desire who applies themselves to this within 90 days is a direct response, direct marketing expert. They are far better than any of their competitors, and they are at least marginally better than anybody in an advertising agency or similar business that they're going to run across in their hometown or, for that matter, on Madison Avenue in New York. To further add to that, let me remind you, and I mentioned it earlier, that most of the top direct response copywriters and direct response consultants in this country have no formal training. And these people are collecting the big fees not just from clients, but from advertising agencies and professional marketing companies. It's not uncommon at all for me to get a secondary assignment from an advertising agency, God knows what they have charged their client, and then by fax or mail or Federal Express, they get it to me to either do the writing or to critique what they've done and fix what they've done, or to at least get them aimed in the right direction to do direct response. So guys like me learned the hard way. We went and we scrounged up every book that ever been written all the way back to the 1800s about direct response and sorted out what made sense and what didn't. We built swipe files the size of U-Haul trailers of ads and headlines that appeared repetitively. We spent not one Saturday in the library, but every Saturday of our lives in the library for years and years and years. And then we spent tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars on our own projects and our own businesses experimenting, trial and error, bruising ourselves and finding out what works and what didn't. And I know many people who've learned through that process and become incredibly astute in a period of a year or two. So if you can do it in a year or two that hard, agonizing way, you ought to be able to do it in 90 days with the shortcuts that we've built in for you. There's even crash course immersion methods that we work with some people on where you can get to the superstar level in a very short period of time and I'll literally be walking around with what is the equivalent of a Midas touch. The first thing you have to understand about coupon decks, and that is realistic expectations. That media, because it is cheap, as you say, it's very attractive. The Valpaks and the bunny mailers, their siren song is 3.5 cents, 4.5 cents, a nickel, and you're getting a message in the hands of a customer. Well, you can't beat the price, that's for sure. But you do kind of get what you pay for in this world. And so you have to have realistic expectations about what this media is capable of delivering to you for its dollar. And for the most part, what it is capable of delivering to you is something that is between break-even and a 2-to-1 return on your money. Now, let's say you break-even. Should you be upset about that, satisfied with that, or happy about that? I think you should be satisfied with that because you've gained new customers that you might not have got any other way. It has not cost you anything to put those customers into your system. Every one of those customers now makes subsequent repeat purchases from you if you handle them properly, and you make profits on those repeat purchases, and they are sources of referrals for you, and you make profits on those referrals. So the bottom line of advertising is if you have a true break-even mechanism, you should continue to use it over and over again as much as you can use it. You can't afford not to use it. It pays its own way. Obviously, if we can, we want to do better than break even. And the techniques that we're talking about, again, apply directly to the ValPak coupon and generally bring it up to above break even performance and sometimes get past the parameters that I've just talked to you about. There are ValPak coupons that I'm aware of, some that I've done that have pulled 4-1, 6-1, 8-1. There's one dentist in Sacramento, California, who we devised a ValPak coupon for, and he got a 14-1 return on his money in 6 consecutive mailings. Well, understand this is a very happy dentist, and he's got a very happy dentist wife, because 14-1, you know, the only question is, how can I give you guys more money? That's the only question being asked of the ValPak rep. Would you please mail more often so we can give you more money? The ValPak coupon is much like the Yellow Pages ad, in that it's limited in size. There are other advertisers right there with it competing for the recipient's attention. It's not as bad as Yellow Pages because they're not directly competitive advertisers, but they are still at least competing for the person's attention of the moment. The ValPak media does have some significant waste. Some people do throw them out without even looking at them, and some, frankly, don't get delivered. So you've got to have a great coupon to get good results. And a great coupon, just like a great Yellow Pages ad, is going to look very different from most of the coupons you're going to see in the ValPak deck. If you're going to deal with one side only, then just about everything we talked about for a Yellow Pages ad applies here. We need a headline that does certain things that we've already talked about. More copy will outperform less copy. A copy-intensive approach that looks very strange compared to the other coupons will generally outperform a non-copy intensive approach. All of those things apply. The exception arrives if you're dealing with a coupon deck media that lets you use both sides of the coupon and will sell you a front and a back. Then, often, you can make one side of it the best possible version of a normal-looking ValPak coupon you can come up with. You still put a good headline on it, but maybe you do put a couple photographs, and you use large type, and you sort of summarize your story, and you refer everybody to the other side. The other side now becomes your sales letter, and in type so tiny that they have to squint to read it, because they will if you've successfully interested them with the A side, you tell your story in as much detail as that space will allow you to tell it, and you literally use that as a sales letter. That's the most effective approach to ValPak that I know of. I'm not going to say that there's any business that can't use this media. I believe just about any business can. But there are businesses that tend to just naturally do better than others. Certainly fast food excels in this media. If a coupon is going to be kept and used, it's going to be a fast food coupon. Someone in that family likes that particular fast food place. And so I watch people, even people who throw the ValPak out, go through it first and pull out the fast food coupons. And they're either going to use them themselves or give them to their kid or give them to their buddy at work who just loves Jack in the Box, you know, or whatever. So or any kind of fast food is perfect for that. Service businesses that deal with the consumer at home or the lady of the house, and I realize that's an antiquated phrase, but nevertheless it still exists in marketing, and there are certain types of businesses that obviously cater to women, and the ValPak mechanism tends to be open and looked at much more by women than it does by men. Men will throw it out unopened. Women, for some reason, kind of can't stand to throw out all those coupons without at least looking to see if there's something in there that will save them money on what they're buying anyway. So women-oriented things, beauty parlors, cosmetics, weight loss, those things tend to work very well in ValPak. Service businesses, plumbers, lawn services, those kind of things that deal with the homeowner tend to work extremely well in Valpak. Then there's a contrarian issue. We've had some interesting success with putting very unusual businesses in Valpak. And what sometimes happens is they're the only one that's new. Everything else has been seen 8-10 times by that same neighborhood receiving that same Valpak, and this new person's coupon stands out like a glowing thumb. I'm going to say that rather than a sore thumb, and it gets a lot of attention, and it works. There's an attorney in our market area who stresses bankruptcy and credit repair and, you know, all of that kind of thing in divorce law, and he's been using Valpak throughout the Phoenix market area for 2 years now, and tells me that he gets an excellent response. And you don't see too many attorneys in Valpak packages. So I think sometimes you can find a way to apply it to businesses that you would never dream of putting in there. Now, the issue of card decks that go to businesses is a whole other question. And in business-to-business marketing, card deck marketing on a national level, the national card decks, which are principally run by magazines, just about every magazine has its own card deck. So Iron Age magazine that deals with people in the iron industry has an Iron Age card deck that goes to their subscribers and inquiries and so forth. Business Week magazine has a Business Week card deck. Success magazine has a Success card deck. Golfing magazine has a golfing card deck. Those card decks generally perform superbly well for lead generation. If you're going to offer a free widget and then do follow-up, they work sometimes for direct sales of merchandise or goods. Local business-to-business card decks often don't work well at all. It is a type of business that a lot of people seem to start without knowing what business they're in, and so your problem is not the media so much as it is the folks running the card deck, and they don't have enough advertisers, and the deck's thin. And frankly, sometimes they cheat because they're in money trouble, and so they tell you they're going to mail 10,000, and they really only mail 2,000, and on and on and on. So, you know, you have to be careful that you're dealing with an established, reputable entity in the deck business, or you may very well buy circulation you never get. The only other little magical tip that I can give you that's specific to Valpak coupons is that sometimes two coupons work better than one, and sometimes three coupons work better than two. I don't mean three separate pieces in the same deck. I mean dividing your surface, your Valpak coupon, up into a large area where you tell your story and put your headline and your copy, and then three tiny little coupons or two tiny little coupons instead of one. And also, sometimes you'll see some card deck and coupon deck marketers will let you do it and some won't. But in the areas where it can be done, we're seeing some success had with co-op coupons, where, for example, the dentist and the optometrist go together, buy one coupon, divide the thing in half, and share it, obviously cutting the expense even farther. It's a very sad thing that it doesn't get done more often than it does, because there are many retail merchants who that technique alone could make the difference between their survival and their prosperity. We have a fairly new shopping center right now in our market area that's like a little theme shopping center, and the merchants in this thing are just starving, and they have a wonderful story to tell to draw traffic there, and this technique would work marvelously for them. Where it all starts to fall apart is trying to get 6 people, 8 people, 10 people, 12 people to agree on anything. You know, it's hard enough to get 2 people to agree that the sun's going to come up tomorrow morning without getting them to all agree on a budget and what the thing's going to look like and who's going to get which position, whose coupon's going to be in the back of the envelope, who's going to be in the front, and who's going to run the deal. And then when it comes time to pay the bills, there's always one merchant who now promised to do it but doesn't put up his money, and so all the others are now arguing about who's going to make up for his short, and on and on and on. So those kind of problems all occur and get in the way of that being done much more than it does. If an individual has an opportunity to develop a group of merchants and get past those problems, he has a wonderful advantage here and can do exactly what you described and be very, very profitable doing it. I like to make recommendations in terms of percentages of total budget rather than dollars. The dollar thing is much harder to give a general rule of thumb to. Businesses that are in a real heavy growth stage are going to have much bigger budgets than mature businesses. And sometimes the budget is controlled not by what it should be, but purely by the fact that somebody only has access to X number of dollars. That's all there is. There ain't no more. So we can sit here and talk about the fact that they should have a $40,000 budget until we're blue in the face. And if they've only got the ability to get $6,000 by mortgaging their mother's wheelchair and using all their credit cards up, well, the $6,000 is about all there is that's going to be spent. And we might as well be practical about that. So I like to talk in terms of percentages instead of dollars. And I would break down a budget for most small businesses this way. I would tell them that they ought to be spending 1/4 to 1/3 of all their marketing dollars on their Yellow Pages ad, and that may very well become the control element of what they have, at least in the early stages of this game plan, to spend on other media. Now, obviously, as they discover that these tools work and their business grows, more and more budget dollars should become available, and the snowball should roll in favor of more marketing expenditures. Then they'll spend 1/4 to 1/3 on the 3-step direct mail campaigns. That's the next place to allocate money. Then 1/4 on Valpak, and then 1/4 to 1/3 on newspapers and shoppers, depending on what money, of course, they have left over from the first three. We've made the first three mandatory, and then we've begun to deal with options. The letter campaigns, and it's certainly the most controllable. If you're in the Yellow Pages and it's $1,200 a month, you've got to write a check for $1,200 all at one time. If you're going to go into Valpak and it's $600, you've got to write a check for $600. When you're doing letter campaigns, you can mail based on how much stamp money you got today. And if you can only get 35 letters out, well, that's better than no letters at all. So you get 35 letters out today. And then tomorrow, you take a look, and maybe you mail another 35 letters. All jokes aside, multi-million dollar companies have been built literally with that process. Hey, we get 50 letters out. We take the money from the 50. We get 75 more out. We take the money that comes in from the 75. We get 100. And before you know it, we're doing 20, 30,000 pieces a month, and our business is off to the races. So that's very good for most small businesses because they get to stretch their investment over the entire month on a day-by-day basis. And many businesses are able to turn that portion of their marketing budget 2 or 3 times during the month. So only $1,000 in cash may really equate to a $3,000 budget when you're doing letter campaigns, because you can turn that $1,000 three times during the course of the month, and you can't do that with anything else. Most business owners who are established, who have been in business for several years, will find that this whole approach costs less than the waste, the fat that has been in their previous budgets, purely for creative. You know, you can often generate more business with a sequence of 3 letters that have been prepared on a typewriter or a word processor and literally run off on a good Xerox at your corner instant print place than you can with a full-color brochure, which in creative costs alone, photography, copy, color separations, all that stuff, you very well might have $15,000, $20,000 in creative alone before you get your first brochure. Then you got to print a large quantity of them because you did color. So maybe you got to do 25,000 of these things, which now sit over here on a shelf because you can only afford to put 1,000 of them out at a time anyway. So you may have another $12,000 tied up in brochure inventory, and you could have got all that done with a letter that you Xerox every day as you need it. Okay, how many letters can we send out today? 70. Great. Go to the copy machine, make 70 letters. Boom. What have we done in terms of capital investment? We've eliminated it, and we've made all the money active. See, we can take the same budget. One business guy has a $30,000 a month budget. You have a $30,000 a month budget. But if a bunch of his budget is tied up in unnecessary creative and inventory of supplies, and your budget is all active and out there working and turning, you may have a $90,000 budget in terms of value. And that's how a little guy gets big. It's amazing how many times we have to change our marketing messages 12 days after we just printed 25,000 brochures. It happens with such frequency, it's laughable. I took control of a company some years ago that was in financial trouble. This company was doing about $1 million a year in sales, and had used up millions of dollars of cash resources. And there was about a 6,000 square foot warehouse, and I would say that a full 2,000 square feet of this warehouse, floor to ceiling, shelf to shelf, was full of marketing documents, brochures, letters, catalogs, all sorts of marketing documents that had been agency prepared and then printed in vast quantities and had outdated themselves long before they could ever be used up. And so there they sat in boxes. And there they sat, interestingly, on the balance sheet of the business as inventory, and yet they were totally 100% worthless. Your choices now are very limited. Your choices are you can sit there and do nothing and pray to God that enough business comes in through the door to keep you afloat. That's one choice. Two is you can try and do it, but you're making all your decisions with at least one eye blindfolded, and you're doing a lot of trial and error and experimentation and learning things the hard way, and so your $30,000 budget, to use that example, is really only now worth $5,000 or $6,000 because of all the waste and the experimentation and the consumption and trying to learn as you do. Or you can abdicate all the responsibility and control to people who claim to be experts and who are going to solve your problem. As a consultant, I have a favorite consultant joke. It comes to me from a friend of mine, Bill Brooks, and Bill says that a consultant is a guy who knows 357 different ways to make love, but he can't get a date on Friday night. Well, that's true of an awful lot of us, unfortunately, and it is truer even more so of advertising agency type people. You know, when you deal with an ad agency, it's much like dealing with an attorney. My main frustration with attorneys is the same frustration probably everybody has. My legal matter, to me, is of life and death importance. And it may very well be the most important thing going on in my life at that moment. The attorney who I'm paying all the money to handle that life and death matter, it ain't life and death for him. It's one of 150 stacks of paper that he's got in his office and 150 pink telephone message slips that he's got from 150 different clients calling him. And to him, it's routine. That's just day-to-day activity. And he isn't going to deal with it until it's at the stage of major screaming crisis, because that's the nature of what he does. And so you've taken your life and death matter and a bunch of money and handed it off to somebody who has to treat it as one of 150 different routine mundane matters. Well, the same thing happens in an ad agency. It has to. You are one of 150 accounts that are being processed through a mill, and the same creative guy by 3 o'clock this afternoon has to have a car ad written, a beauty parlor ad written, a widget ad written, a fax machine ad written, and he's sitting there working like a machine. You know, he's not wandering around in the halls with his mind wide open to a great idea for you. He's not sitting at night while he watches TV just thinking about your business and being able to see something on TV and say, oh, hey, boy, that would work great for this business, because he's got 150 businesses to think of. So really, he's not thinking about any of them. And so you, because it's your thing, when you learn this stuff, you apply it all to your thing. And that's a luxury no one else has when you bring in outside help. You know, I can give you one great example from our own industry. Our publishing business has a fairly small list that has grown gradually during the years. And we, year before last, this is the last time I really ran these numbers, but we averaged over $400 a year per customer on our list in sales. Our most similar competitor, admittedly a much larger company than ours, but they averaged less than $40 per customer in sales for the year to their customers. Why did we sell 10 times as much stuff to our customers as they did to their customers? If you took all their promotional material, knowing what you know now based on what we've said so far, and laid it on one table, and you laid all our promotional material on another, you would see two very glaring things that you might not have noticed before, but you would notice now. One, their stuff is much classier, slicker, more expensively produced than our promotional stuff is. But more importantly, they, in all of their promotional materials, sold their products. In all of our promotional materials, we sold widgets. We created offers. We created packages. We matched premiums with products and created interesting stories. And we kept going back to our customers month after month after month with new and different enticing widgets. They simply went back to their customers month after month after month with really a glorified price list. And so we outsold them 10 to 1. And the same thing is true for any business against any of its competitors. And that's how powerful this stuff is. Our techniques, the kind of things that we talk about here, bring the pleasure back into the whole buying experience for the consumer or the business client and make the relationship fun. There is a touch of humor to it. There is a touch of relationship to it. There's a touch of affinity to it. And so your customers, when they buy through these techniques, see a very different thing than most of their other purchasing. And they enjoy it more. They're going to stay with you. They're going to tell other people about you. You know, that's a whole other aspect of this thing. There's a very well-known survey that has been done that demonstrates why businesses lose customers. And here's the results. 1% of them die, and there's certainly not much we can do about that unless we're in the nutrition or healthcare business, because if they're going to die, they're going to die. 3% move away, and there's not a great deal that we can do about that. 5% follow a friend or a relative's advice, and they switch to that friend's preferred merchant. And there is something that we could have and should have done about that. 9% switch because they find what they believe to be, what they perceive to be a better product or a service. There is something we should be doing about that. If that happens, that's a problem. 14% switch due to product or service dissatisfaction. Okay, you can't please everybody, but you should be able to satisfy most. You should be able to keep most. And there's no excuse to be losing 14% for this kind of a reason. Now, all of those reasons, though, only total 32%. So what about the other 68%? Brace yourself. Get ready for this. 68% of customers who leave a business leave because of indifference. They simply don't feel valued, appreciated, wanted. They don't feel important. They're not communicated with. They're not continually offered new widgets. They're ignored. And so someone else comes along who has this kit and knows how to market, and he gets them. And so it becomes very obvious when you look at what it costs you to get a customer that losing one costs you all that money again, plus the cost to replace them. So everyone you lose costs you twice as much as it does to get a new one. Now, that's very important because that means it's a bigger profit center for you to keep customers than it is to get customers. What you have to have is a commitment to building what I call maximum customer value. You have to understand that the customer is an asset that has to be taken care of and maintained like any other asset, and that you have an opportunity to start with a value A and build all the way to a better and bigger value B with each customer that you get and each customer that you have. And so you have to do as good of a job at marketing to your existing customers as you do at marketing to get new customers. Total customer value, so that you understand, is a composite of really three things. It's the profit made on the initial purchase, if in fact any. It may have been a break-even purchase, but it's the profit made on the initial purchase. It's the profit or profit potential that exists with all the repeat purchases from having them as a lifetime or permanent customer. And it's the profit that comes from all of the people they refer to you that you would not have reached otherwise, or that you don't have to use three-step letters and Yellow Pages and all the other media. They become a media and bring you additional customers. And all that added together represents total customer value. And when you pencil it a little bit one way or another, you can quickly see how a customer who maybe made a $100 purchase with you can be worth $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to you in total value. And so they become much more important as a result of that. Now, how do you build that kind of value? Well, one of the most important steps that you take to be able to build all of that is you have to have a very good answer constantly to one of the questions that is so important to us as people that it's become part of our vernacular. It's how we greet each other. And the question is, what's new? You see, I don't ask, tell me everything that's the same as it was the last time I saw you 3 months ago. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what's new. And that's why major manufacturers and marketers are constantly, you know, it's the new and improved Tide with the green specs, and next month it's the new and improved Tide with the blue specs, and then the box is square, and then the box is round, and then it's got white handles and blue handles, because they know the customer is very easily bored, and they are in search of what's new. And if you don't have a good answer to what's new, they go looking for it somewhere else. The restaurant, the nightclub business, is the most fickle of any of them, and they can go in search of what's new overnight. I mean, I can remember when I moved to Phoenix, one of the hottest spots in town, and I was between marriages, so this was important to me at the moment, was a nightclub called Bogart's. And, I mean, it was the place. you could buy, I believe it was $100, you could get an annual membership card, and the only thing it entitled you to do was to stand in line in the shorter line at the back door to get in, instead of standing in the long line at the front door to get in. But if you wanted to get into Bogart's, you stood in a line. That's how hot this place was. And I was there on one Saturday night when it was as I've just described it to you, and the following Friday night I went there, and I and the bartender was the crowd. They had all left. Bogart's didn't come up with a good answer to what's new too many weeks in a row, and they all went somewhere else. The crowd in one group got up and moved. And I've seen it happen over and over again in the restaurant business. It doesn't happen that dramatically to many other businesses, but make no mistake, it happens. A bored customer goes elsewhere. They forget about you, they don't talk about you, they don't buy from you, and they're easily wooed by some competitor who comes along with something that's new and exciting. So how do you answer this question that is always in their mind? We've really already taught you how to answer this question. You answer this question by frequently and continually reinventing your business inside your business, by inventing new widgets and offering those new widgets through constant communication with your past and present customers, so that at least once a month, if not more often, they are hearing from you and they're getting a new widget offered up to them. Here's something new and exciting that's going on. And that will take you a giant step forward to keeping customers excited, to selling to them more frequently, to selling more to them, and to getting them to refer more often. Word of mouth marketing is the most powerful and beneficial kind of advertising or marketing that you can ever have for a business, for the very simple reason that what I say good about you is infinitely more believable to the public than anything you can say about you. So if you have a lot of satisfied customers running around saying good things about you, you have a much more believable marketing vehicle out there than anything we can ever create for you in media. So the power is greatly multiplied, and every business and company understands it. They just don't know how to get it. They don't know how to harness it. And so they take what referrals they can get kind of by accident, you know, and they just sort of say, well, we'll do the best job we can, and gee, if we do a good job, people will talk about us. And there's some truth to that, but we're finding that we can go beyond that, and we really can manage, and we can very deliberately stimulate increased word of mouth advertising and word of mouth marketing. I have a little formula that I teach to stimulate and to build word of mouth advertising, and for easy way to remember it, it forms the word ear, and the E stands for earn. Walt Disney, back when Anaheim, California was still a swamp, wrote a marketing principle that was taught to everybody involved with Disney, and it is a wonderful principle. It says the way to be very successful in marketing is to do what you do so well that people can't resist telling others about you. That your show, if you will, that the happy, pleasant experience of coming to your place of business or dealing with your people on the phone or interacting with your company, however it is that they interact, that in and of itself, forget the product, forget the service, the process itself is so terrific. It's such a wonderful show that they have to go tell other people, gee, you can't believe the experience that I had. And of course, Disney has practiced that over the years at their parks with their manic insistence on the cleanliness, the pristine cleanliness of the parks. And you can go still today to Universal Studios, and you can go to Knott's Berry Farm, and you can go to any of the amusement parks that are out there in all the cities across the country, and you're not going to find one that is one-tenth as clean as a Disney park. And most of the people who leave Disney parks go home and talk to their friends and relatives and neighbors, and they say to them, you can't believe how clean this place was. There are millions of people there, and there's no gum on the ground, and there was no... Well, that's not an accident. That's because Disney doesn't look at maintenance as maintenance. They look at maintenance as marketing, because it's how they do what they do so well that the people who visit them can't resist going back and telling everybody else about them. And so one of the things you have to be continually asking yourself about your own business is, how can we do what it is that we do here so well that people can't resist telling others about us? You know, when the patient comes in the door, we teach the staff not to sit behind the desk and kind of look up at them and grunt and hand them paperwork to fill out if that's what they have to do. The staff should stand up, come out from around the counter, greet the patient, shake the patient's hand, say, "Hi, Mr. Patient, welcome to XYZ Clinic," or, "Hi, Mr. Patient, good to see you today, how are you feeling," and go through a greeting process. Well, that patient never has that experience in any other doctor's office he goes to. He never has that experience any place he goes to. And a lot of those little things added together now add up to this person leaving that office, and we call it the wow experience. It's saying to himself, "Wow, I got to tell somebody. This is the most interesting, amazing, best thing that's happened to me all day." And when you can create that for your customers, you know, when they leave your place of business saying, "Gee, I was feeling kind of down when I came in here, but this is great. This is the best thing that's happened to me all day, is coming here to pick up my cleaning. This is just wonderful." And they run into their next door neighbor when they're now at home getting the cleaning out of the car. They're going to tell that guy about your cleaners, and they're going to spread the word. And that has immense power. So that's the earning part of the formula. There's a wonderful book called Word of Mouth Marketing by a friend of mine, Jerry Wilson, and it's available in bookstores or from us if you wish. And certainly you should get and study and wear out that book. It is the practical In Search of Excellence. The Word of Mouth Marketing now takes all that and makes it real practical and how to, and shows you how to manage that and get results from it. And you should definitely read the book, and you should probably get books for all of your staff people. There's also a little audio cassette program which we put together called Customer Service Diplomacy, and it talks to the frontline people about their role as diplomats, as ambassadors in this whole process, and then in converting the customer to a diplomat, an ambassador that goes forth and spreads the good word. And that certainly should be a tool. You get one of those for every one of your people and equip them and have them listen to the tapes as they drive back and forth to work, and you certainly use it if you hire any new people. There's also a little program called Phone Power, which is designed for any of your people who answer the phone, because that can be a make or break function right there. And again, you should have that for all of your people. When we earn the right to ask. And it's amazing to me how many business people just never in any way, shape, or form ask their customers or clients for referrals. Now, I grew up in direct sales, and so I was taught and beat over the head with a very simple mechanism. And the mechanism was, as soon as you make a sale, and I was selling in the home, face-to-face, toes-to-toes, nose-to-nose with mom and dad, as soon as you made that sale, you put a pad or a card or a form and a pen in front of mom and dad, and you said something to the effect of, "You know, most of my customers come to me as referrals from satisfied customers like you. And I'll bet you know five or six people probably who live right here in the neighborhood who would love to have a whatever it is that I was selling just like you got. And I would be eternally grateful if you would let me use your name when I gave them a call to set up an appointment. And if you would take time right now to just get your Christmas card book out or, you know, your personal phone book and just give me those five names and addresses, I'd really appreciate it." And 9 times out of 10, I'd walk out of that house, maybe not with 5, but with 3 or 4 good, solid names, addresses, and telephone numbers, and most of them would turn into appointments, and some of them would turn into sales. Now, I learned that discipline when I was a pup, and I'm always amazed at how many salespeople don't use it and how many business owners don't use it. A print shop owner should be asking for referrals. A dress shop owner should be asking for referrals. A hair salon stylist should be asking for referrals. When do you ask for referrals? Right after you've done something praiseworthy that they praise you for. Somebody comes in to pick up their job at the print shop and says, "Boy, this is great," or, "I really appreciate you bailing me out and getting this done overnight." That's the time. "Hey, you know, we're trying to grow the business here. We're taking on some new equipment, and, you know, we really depend on clients like you for referrals. I wonder if you just take a few of your business cards and jot down on the back of each one the name, and we'll look them up if we have to, the phone numbers of a few people that I can call and talk to," and you ask for the referral. And when you ask, you get. Perfect proof. A difficult environment to get referrals. The doctors give us more trouble about asking than any group of business people I've ever worked with in my life. They really have a lot of hang-ups about this. But one of the things the chiropractors do is they do a back care class in their clinic that all the patients come to in a group, and then they teach them about their back and how to take care of themselves. And so we devised a very simple mechanism for the back care classes where at the end of the class, the doctor essentially says, "Oh, by the way, many of you got here as a result of being referred by somebody who cared enough about you to refer you, and that's how we get most of our new patients, and so we would really appreciate it if you would refer too. And for that reason, I'm passing out these 'I care enough about these people to refer them to your office' forms." And they pass out these little forms. forms which have places for 10 names, addresses, and telephone numbers, and they ask them to fill them out, and then they're going to send them some introductory information about chiropractic. Of course, what they do is they plug them into a three-step letter system as soon as they get their names and addresses. Now, I did that very fast, and it's a very soft request. It's very painless. It's done at the end of the class, so if somebody doesn't want to do it, it's easy for them to just leave the form on their chair and sneak out of the office. Guess what happens? 7 out of 10 patients fill out the form. Turn in the form with somewhere between 3 and 10 names and addresses and telephone numbers on the form. Costs nothing to get those names, addresses, and telephone numbers. Those names, addresses, and telephone numbers get plugged into the three-step letter system, and 1/3 of them become new patients. All from the power of simply asking for referrals.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the cassette over for the beginning of side two.
The R stands for recognize and reward. Now, the recognize part is very important, and I'm going to tell you a story to illustrate. I've had a relationship with my attorney for 13 years. And no offense intended to any attorneys listening, but as attorneys go, he does a pretty good job. And I would say the same thing if he was here, and he's become a friend. And over the years, I've referred him a great deal of business. In 1988, the auto accident cases I referred him alone were worth over $130,000. I would call that a good referral source. I have not referred a soul to him since 1988. I've had opportunities to do so, I just haven't done it. You want to know why? Because I never got a thank you. I never got a thank you call. I never got a thank you card. I never got a bottle of booze at Christmas. I never got a thank you. And as dumb and selfish and unreasonable as that may sound, you're the same way. When we do something for somebody, we want some kind of expression of gratitude. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Thank you, the two most powerful words in the English language and the cheapest currency you'll ever print. You can't overuse thank you, and he underused it to the worst degree possible. And as a result, I'm not referring anybody to him anymore. I keep waiting for him to ask, how come? So I can educate him, but he's unfortunately not even marketing savvy enough to ask. People want recognition, and in fact, people are walking around with a hidden sign on their head that says, I want to be important. And if you give them an opportunity to be important, perhaps one of the most illustrative stories, 3 years ago, I was the only male guest in the Anatole Hotel in Dallas, Texas during the Mary Kay convention. Had I been single, that would have been an interesting experience. And if you've never been around Mary Kay people, and I love Mary Kay people, I love the whole direct sales industry, but the Mary Kay thing is really particularly interesting because, of course, first of all, it's 99% gals, and they are all in pink blazers, and they have enough metal on them. Because in Mary Kay, if you breathe, you get an award pin. If you breathe twice, you get a plaque. And if you breathe repetitively, they bring you up on stage and give you a Cadillac and a Minco. So these guys have how they get through the metal detectors at the airports, I will never, ever know. They have all these badges and pins, and they look like an invading army, you know, in the hotel. And if you understand the direct sales business at all, you will understand that the majority of the people involved with these companies, very frankly, don't make great sums of money. Some do, but most don't. Most are part-time, spare-time involved, and they really make very small sums of money, many of them a few $100s a year. So they are not continually involved, primarily motivated by the money, so why are they there? Why are they involved? Why do they go to all the meetings? Why do they use the products? Why do they sell the product? Because an environment has been created where they get to feel very important. They get a lot of recognition, and they don't get it anywhere else. Their husband, the first year they were married, bragged on their cooking. He hasn't bragged on that cooking for 17 years. You know, their boss, the first week that she worked on the job, said she was terrific. He hasn't said a complimentary word to her since he read The One-Minute Manager 4 years ago, and then he only did it for one day. You know, she just hasn't got a lot of recognition. And in this environment, she gets tons of it. So if you transfer that to your business, if you find ways to give positive recognition to your customers for being good customers and for being good referral sources, guess what happens? When you reinforce behavior, you get more of it. And so if you give them positive recognition as a result of them giving you a referral, they'll be back tomorrow with another one. They get into the process, and they thrive on that. A chiropractor and I were sitting around, we were talking about this Mary Kay incident. And he said, we could do the same thing. We created a health mentors club. And the Health Mentors Club works like this. As soon as you, the patient, have referred your first patient, first of all, your name goes up on the board in the lobby as a VIP patient, but you also get your Health Mentors Club pin, a little gold pin to wear on your lapel. As soon as you've referred your second patient, you trade in the gold pin for a gold pin with a little ruby in it. As soon as you've referred your third patient, you trade that in for a gold pin with a little emerald in it. As soon as you've referred your fourth patient, you trade it in for the little gold pin with a diamond in it. And then they start stringing the jewels down on a little string that hangs from the pin. Now, when you trade those pins in is at the monthly Health Mentor Club luncheon, which happens once a month, and the doctor throws a luncheon for all his Health Mentor Club members and all their friends, relatives, neighbors, and coworkers that they want to bring to lunch. And he brings in an interesting guest speaker, maybe somebody on diet, nutrition, or aerobics or whatever in the area, and they have a nice lunch, and the speaker speaks, and then they have their award ceremony. And every one of the club members who's going to exchange a pin or get a pin comes up on stage in order, and they exchange pins, and he shakes hands and hugs them, and off they go. I was at a Health Mentors Club luncheon for this single doctor chiropractic practice with over 400 people in the ballroom at lunch. There were more people at that luncheon than there have been at many of my seminars, I'm sad to confess. And two-thirds of them were guests. Were guests, not patients, but guests of the patients being introduced to that doctor in that environment. Guess how his practice is doing? I'll tell you, his practice is doing very, very well. That's recognition. You can also reward for referrals. You can reward with promotional programs that are announced in advance. Help us, we're in a new customer drive, we're in a new client drive, we're in a new patient drive, we're in a new member drive. Help us during this drive, and you can qualify for the following prizes and premiums, vacations, whatever. Or send them a nice bottle of wine, send some flowers, send a couple of movie tickets, send a nice gift with a thank you note, and guess what? You'll get more referrals. The first thing that I would add to everything we've talked about is the whole idea of being proactive versus reactive. And really being an active marketer. And if I may, two quick stories. Some very good friends of ours owned a restaurant, and they became friends after we began going there as customers. They handled that right. They became our favorite restaurant. A business associate of mine and I, they were very close to our office. I think we were their first customers in the door when they opened, and we probably ate lunch there 4 out of every 5 days a week, except when we were traveling and out of town. Dinner maybe twice a week. And they had a lot of other customers with similar loyalty patterns. They served great food. As a husband and wife that owned the restaurant, and the husband had been a chef at the Point Resorts in Phoenix. He was terrific. They did a lot of right things. You could order off the menu. I mean, they would make anything you wanted. They were very personable. The only real thing that they did wrong is that the business, through word of mouth and through being good, through doing what it did well, built to a certain level, but that level wasn't quite enough to be profitable. It was right around break even. And they did that with no advertising, no marketing, and they stubbornly did not believe in any advertising and marketing. So by being right at a break even level, the first time that trouble came along, which hit them in the form of Phoenix's summer slump, which does legitimately happen in Phoenix. During the months of July and August, our population drops by 2/3, and that's going to affect the restaurant business. They weren't prepared for it with cash reserves or anything else. And so very quickly they got behind paying their taxes, and, you know, the sudden drop in revenue and cash flow began to cause all the other little internal financial problems that happened to a business, and they were very quickly on their way out of business. And it was very sad for me to see it happen for this reason. It could have been turned around without spending a dollar, because they didn't have a dollar to spend, if they had just, frankly, gotten up off their butts from the stools at the bar, not to imply they're drinkers, they're not drinkers, but from the stools sitting there at the bar waiting for business to come in, and gone out and gotten some business. When all else fails, or when you don't have a lot of money to work with, generally you got time and you got shoe leather. If you don't have money, you got time. And there's ways to go out and get business. Again, when I was a kid, my father had a pair of cufflinks that he wore all the time, and they had the letters on them, YCDBSOYA. And I remember the first time I asked him what that stood for, and he sat me down and educated me about all this. And what that stands for is you can't do business sitting on your ass. And it is a great axiom. You know, we have a picture that we show at the seminars of a guy with a cigar in his mouth behind his desk, and the caption of the picture is, "What's wrong with this picture?" And the answer is, the guy's behind the desk. You know, he needs to be out from behind the desk and going out and getting business. And those restaurant owners could have done all sorts of things. They weren't open for breakfast, so they had the whole first half of the day to work. They could have gone out and distributed flyers by hand. They could have called on businesses in the area. They could have gone door-to-door to homeowners in their area. There's all sorts of active things that they could have done to get new customers in the door, who they then did a wonderful job of converting to continuing loyal permanent customers. And so they wouldn't have had to do it very long to have turned that business around and made the difference. But instead, they sat there and atrophied. The cobwebs formed around them. And finally, the tax people came and closed the doors, and now their skeletal bones are probably still sitting there at the bar of the closed building. And so I think it's important to understand that in just about all stages of your business, you want to use all of the kinds of marketing methods that we've taught you how to use, but you never want to forget that a lot of business can be done through personal selling, through getting out there and meeting and greeting and speaking and talking to people and using the force of your own personality and your own physical energy to get some things done. I advise businesses that are cash tight and need to do marketing to focus on two things. One is telemarketing. Although it can be grueling, it can be time consuming, I don't believe it is the most efficient use of time, but its greatest virtue is it costs nothing. If you're making calls in a local area, you already bought that phone. And so if you take an hour or 2 hours a day and get on the phone and make telephone calls with a decent script, collect some names and addresses, follow up with a three-step letter system, or use telemarketing as a supplement to a three-step letter system, you can generate business out of thin air. And there are times when it may be necessary for you to do it, and you shouldn't hesitate to do it. The other thing that I encourage some businesses, particularly when they are relatively young and new to do, we do it with our doctors, is closed for selling time. And we often make the doctor, for example, close his business on Thursday afternoons and take no patients out there. He must be out in the field doing something that constitutes personal selling to generate business. And that discipline forces things to happen for that practice. As we come to the end here, I wound up talking a little bit about direct selling, which is a topic that not a lot of business owners really want to hear about and is not something that a lot of business owners necessarily want to do. But I want to tell you two things about it. One is that some of the best and the brightest and the most effective and most successful marketing experts in this country, today the people that get the big fees and that play in the league that I play in, one of the things that we all have in common is that at one time or another, we went out there on the street and we sold encyclopedias, or we sold cookware, or we sold vacuum cleaners, or we sold some other direct sales item, nose to nose, toes to toes with mom and dad, which I believe is the toughest type of selling that there is. And we learned how to sell on that battlefield in that environment. And that kind of skill then came into the marketing environment and matched with these tools. And that, I believe, is why they are so powerful. You know, when you sit down with somebody from an advertising agency or you sit down with some other marketing expert, one of the first questions you might ask them, and it's a question that I always ask them, is what did you sell on the street, door to door, nose to nose, and how did you do? And if they've never had that experience or they didn't do very well, I don't think they're really qualified to be involved in marketing either. The second interesting point about all that is that one of the most common things about people that do very well in the tough direct sales business and the tough direct sales environment, and I know many. I know many who work at that level today, and I know many who worked at that level once and today are presidents of companies, CEOs of companies, and marketing consultants. And one of the things that they had in common was a sort of rare type of determination about how they approached each day. I'll never forget a fellow by the name of Jack Nagel who sold pots and pans and was, if you looked at him, you would pick him to be the least likely to succeed of anybody you had ever met. He's a big old fat guy and he had a crew cut and he had a pair of glasses that had one of the frames taped on, and I knew him for 3 years and he never replaced that pair of glasses. And he went out, his whole wardrobe consisted of the JCPenney work suit that comes in gray and green, and the shirt and the pants match, you know exactly what I'm talking about, white socks, old black army shoes, and over top of that gray or green work suit, he would put a sport coat. And that's how he would go out into the field every day to sell $700 sets of pots and pans. And Jack had an old Rambler American that he drove. And Jack's commitment to himself, which he shared with his wife who helped him enforce this commitment, was that he would not return home at night until he'd made a sale. He would not stop to eat until he'd made a sale. And that was how Jack operated his business. And this guy, who looked unlikely to succeed, had only a sixth grade education and a very poor command of the English language. Not a great personality, certainly not a charismatic individual, not a high level of skills. He was certainly not a sophisticated salesperson. But he knew one thing. He knew that he was going to make a sale before he stopped and had lunch or dinner or before he went home. And there were a few nights when he slept in that Rambler and started again the next morning to keep his commitment. And he took that commitment that seriously. And as a result, to my knowledge, Jack never made less than $200,000 a year selling cookware door to door. Now, I don't suggest that anybody ought to go out and do that. And I don't suggest that anybody ought to deliberately wander around looking like the least likely person to succeed or ought to drop out of school and go into selling. None of that is the point. The point is that if you apply yourself to your business with the knowledge that you have and the education that you have and the marketing education that you've just gained, if you applied yourself to your business with that same level of determination and commitment, how well would you do? And I think the answer is that you would do very, very well. And I hope what we've done is give you the tools and give you the strategies that enable you to make that kind of commitment and have that kind of determination and enthusiasm about your business. We have done everything that we could possibly think of to make this a self-contained, do-it-yourself kit. However, if any of you find that you need or that you want assistance with any of the ideas or strategies that have been suggested to you here in this kit, or for one reason or another you'd like some hands-on assistance with some of your marketing problems or business challenges, we certainly welcome your call and we'll do everything we can to help you. Feel free to call our office.
cassette.
On this side of this cassette, I'm going to talk you through the marketing documents in each of the tabbed sections in your notebook. You'll undoubtedly find one, maybe two of these directly applicable to your business or sales career, and you'll come back to that one or two most. But you can and should learn from all of them. And incidentally, if you cannot open up your mind and learn to creatively transfer strategies from one business to another, from diverse businesses to yours, you will be a failure as a marketer, doomed to forever trudge along only on the path most traveled, copying the copycats who copy the copycats, a member of the mediocre majority in your business or profession. Now, you are about to look at complete, effective, direct marketing systems. You must be able to extract from each of them to build your own. In Section 1, you'll find a restaurant example. The famous Giorgio letters that I show in most of my seminars are included. Note that there are margin notes on all of these letters to call your attention to the structure and the techniques behind the copy. I have done this only with the restaurant model, not with the other models. You'll learn a lot by going through the other models yourself and trying to spot, identify, and make notes just like these of the strategies behind the copy. All of the letters in all six sections are written from the formulas in my book, The Ultimate Sales Letter. If you do not have a copy, you should get one at a bookstore or from my office. The big idea behind the Giorgio's letters is redefining or reinventing the business itself. You see, this is not the restaurant business. It is now the special event celebration business and the romance business. Many salespeople and business owners can use the very same creative approach to redefining their businesses, products, and services. And incidentally, you can confuse, confound, and conquer your competition with this strategy. By reinventing your business, you change the rules of the game, the playing field, everything in your favor. Letter number 2 features an attention-getting attachment, sometimes called a grabber. In this case, 3 pennies are attached. I have used little plastic baggies of dirt for real estate, baggies of beach sand for travel, foreign coins and currency, and U.S. dollar bills for financial offers and services, baseball cards, Desert Storm trading cards, snapshots, stamps, and I could go on and on. Imagine, by the way, using a real dollar bill, as I and some of my clients sometimes do. Here you are sending out 5,000 letters, each with a real dollar bill stapled to it. Very few marketers have the guts. Even fewer have the discipline. The temptation to be a cheapskate about this and substitute funny money or a coupon or something else is just overwhelming. Yet, hardly anything beats the attention-commanding power of that real dollar. In one campaign, for the purpose of obtaining appointments with very high-level, carefully targeted business leaders for an expensive product, the marketer used Federal Express delivery and attached real $100 bills to the letters. He sent out 80 packages and secured 53 appointments. On letter number 2 in the Giorgio's example also ups the ante. It improves the offer. This technique is not always necessary, but often helpful. Depending on the offer, you can reduce the price, offer payments, add a premium, as I did here, or some combination of all that, to make the formerly irresistible offer even more irresistible. After letter number 3, you'll see a postcard. This is a standard postcard design created by Jerry Ballinger, mentioned in the kit's Appendix A. And it uses a very dramatic, eye-catching front cover and a copy-intensive back. Some businesses use a series of such postcards as a monthly mini-newsletter. Also in this section, you'll see a Yellow Pages ad, which also works for Valpak and Money Mailer. And you'll see that it is quite different from most Yellow Pages ads and mail pack coupons. Note that there is a real headline, specific offers, even a recorded message option. Incidentally, for many local marketers, Valpak and Money Mailer are very good advertising vehicles. I personally give a slight edge to Money Mailer because of the larger size and full-color look of their coupons. I give a slight edge to Valpak on the quality of lists and delivery, so they balance out. Last in this section, you'll see a newsletter template. As you heard in the middle tapes, I am a big believer in the newsletter as a customer retention tool for stimulating repeat business and referrals and introducing new products, services, and promotions, but also as an excellent tool for follow-up on unconverted leads after a primary letter sequence has planted the farm. Now, in each of the subsequent sections, the documents do not necessarily replicate this look, nor are all these documents included. So this is the most complete model in the kit, and you should refer to it when developing your own. Section 2 is for sales professionals. The two examples shown here are from the automobile and the real estate business, and 90% of it is aimed naturally at individual consumers. If you are a sales professional selling to businesses, business owners, executives, or purchasing agents, you'll want to combine what is shown here with the business-to-business examples in Section 6. Section 3 deals with the professional practice. However, everybody will benefit from closely studying the entire collection of letters I developed for the massage therapy business. This model includes both two consumers and two business letter sequences. You'll also find a chiropractic practice series and an accounting practice series. Section 4 provides a retail store model. You'll note that in this model, as well as in the auto sales model back in that section, we are focused on getting a prospect to step forward to come into the place of business. The commonly used term for this is traffic building. In these instances, I call it enhanced traffic building because the people coming in from these campaigns are of higher quality than those created by traditional mass advertising. These campaigns presume two things. One, that you and or your staff performs effectively and successfully once you have a prospective customer in front of you. And two, that there is significant value in getting a person into your place of business. Frankly, if your internal marketing and selling act isn't together, then all the success in traffic building isn't going to make you any money. When people come to your place of business, they need to have a wow experience. You'll also notice that the Dayton clothing store letters, as well as others in this kit, rely on the use of premiums and incentives. If you are not familiar with many sources for very inexpensive, attractive premiums and promotional merchandise, you'll want to read the special report about that included in the kit. It offers a very valuable resource. Module 5 is for those in two-consumer service businesses, like carpet cleaning, gardening, interior decorating, selling and installing home security systems, and so on. The example used here brings the customer to the place of business for service rather than bringing the service to the home, but this is a minor modification. And this example sells a loss leader, a very low-priced service. Many service businesses would instead offer a free consultation or inspection of some sort, like the free home plumbing problem prevention audit example I use in my seminars. Module 6 is for business-to-business marketers with three examples, a computer service, a chemical supplier, and a manufacturer of truck tarps. Many people incorrectly feel that magnetic marketing, my copywriting techniques, and my other strategies are only appropriate for marketing to consumers, the great unwashed masses, and not to sophisticated audiences or to business owners and executives. While the success of all of Jeff Paul's students, certified financial planners, selling in many cases to very sophisticated clients, proves that these strategies work at all levels. The TARP company examples shown here come from an actual campaign, a campaign that completely turned a business around from being dependent on outbound telemarketing, usually making multiple calls to fight through screening, then playing phone tag with the right person, then having to send literature, then another round of phone tag. Turned this business around from all of that to being 80% reliant on inbound. Now the sales reps spend their time on the phones with the decision makers who have taken the initiative to call in, usually to get a few questions answered, and then place an order. The productivity difference is dramatic. Just so you fully understand the value of these models, I want you to know what it would cost to have a campaign like this created for you from scratch. When I prepare a 3-to-5-letter sequence and accompanying enclosures for a client, my fee runs from a low of $3,850 to $7,500 depending on the complexity of the project, plus royalties tied to gross sales or lead production for as long as the marketing system I've built is used. Of course, you can hire copywriters at all different fee levels. There are what I'd call journeymen working for as little as $300 or $400 a letter, and there are a few handfuls of top pros commanding three, four, even five times my fees. At the very least, a reasonable valuation for each model provided here is several thousand dollars. In total, there's well over $50,000 of paid-for copywriting examples in this kit. However, the truth is, for most small businesses and most sales professionals, they do not need the caliber of strategy and copywriting. I've been teaching the kind of strategies that are in this kit for over 10 years, and in the last couple of years providing kits like this one to thousands of salespeople and business owners. I'm very pleased and very grateful that I have almost a full file cabinet of letters from people reporting phenomenal results. I personally know hundreds of business people who've literally made millions of dollars with exactly what you now hold in your hands. But I also have to tell you there are failures. Some I know about, some I do not. Why would one person succeed with this information, another, even in the same business, fail? Actually, that's just a microcosm within the bigger success versus failure question that has fascinated any number of people, including Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale, more contemporary figures like Dr. Dennis Waitley and Tony Robbins. My friend John Kappas wrote a book titled, Success is Not an Accident. Failures prefer believing that it is. Their way out is to call success a matter of luck, fate, or coincidence, or to claim some others have some advantage that they do not. Hopefully, you are in the group that understands that success is definitely not an accident. I have become convinced that there are three giant component parts to exceptional entrepreneurial or selling success. I think these are the really big difference makers, the three big X factors of business success. Here they are. Number one is responsibility. This has become a core part of all my messages, written or spoken. You know, if you boil down just about all goals, everybody's goals, the bottom line of them all is a desire for greater control. And the key word is control. Maybe you want greater control over your career or business, your boss, your employees, your clients, customers or patients, your finances, your future. If you're a parent, maybe you want more control over your kids. Maybe you want more control over what goes on in your community, your state, or even the federal government. Maybe you want more control over your physical health. One way or another, all the other goals we set and hope for and aspire to involve this issue of control. Now, once you come to grips with this, you hold a pretty powerful key to unlocking achievement breakthroughs. This simplifies your quest. It brings everything into sharp focus. Now you have everything boiled down to a single question. How do I get more control? Now here's the answer. Control and responsibility are inseparably linked, interconnected. As one goes, so goes the other. Consider the person who has the least control of just about anybody, a penniless, homeless person. He has no control over anything. He also has no responsibility, and this is not a coincidence. It doesn't matter what time he wakes up in the morning. He has no job to get to, no work to do, no bills to pay, no possessions or property to take care of, no responsibilities. This may remind you of the original thinking of our forefathers. Back then, only property owners were allowed to have the right to vote. Translated, responsible citizens should have control. And regardless of how you feel about that, this relationship reveals what I believe to be the most important and powerful secret of success. To get more control, create, accept, and manage greater responsibility. And in the business environment, as you are able to delegate one responsibility, you take on a bigger one. The person who is literally in search of new and greater responsibility is the person guaranteed to acquire greater control over his circumstances. All right, I've wandered off into a discussion of general personal success principles, and I'm supposed to be talking about marketing, right? Well, number two on my list is responsibility for marketing. For any number of reasons, many business people are very eager to divest themselves of responsibility for their marketing. They love giving up that responsibility to advertising agencies, to consultants,
to freelance writers, to telemarketers, and so on. But as they get out from under that responsibility, they give up control. You just cannot have one without the other. One of the savviest entrepreneurs I know, Bob Stupak, owner of the Vegas World Casino and Hotel in Las Vegas, who I talk about in some of my other tapes, told me that he would delegate just about anything in his business but the marketing. Why, he asks rhetorically, would I take my attention away from the thing that brings the customers in the door, the lifeblood of the business? And that is a very good question. This, kid, is all about taking personal responsibility for your marketing so that you can have control over the results. I have set out to create independence, not breed dependence. Fortunately, I don't need to create consulting or copywriting business. The demand for my services far exceeds the available supply of my time and energy, and I get to cherry pick, to pick and choose those people I feel like working with and those projects I want to work on. So I was free to design this entire kit not to create demand for my services, but instead to equip most people to confidently and competently grab onto responsibility for their marketing so that they can get in control of their flow of new business. The third point I put in front of you is responsible marketing. If you read my book, How to Solve All Your Advertising, Marketing, and Sales Problems Once and for All, you'll get this message loud and clear. It is my belief that, with very rare exception, business owners should stop all advertising, all marketing, that is not and cannot be held accountable for its cost. If you cannot accurately measure the return on your investment, don't make that investment. This guideline alone makes a lot of advertising and marketing decisions easy. Imagine sitting down with your stockbroker. You have $50,000 to invest in the market. You want to know which stocks you'll buy, how much of your money will go into each one so you can watch daily to see if your investment goes up or down. And over time, you want to be able to say, hey, I bought that at $3 and I sold it at $5. But your broker says, hey, forget all that. I'll just divvy the dough up over a handful of stocks. We'll let it all ride for a month. Then we'll sell it all. And heck, wherever we are. There's no point in worrying yourself silly over all that accounting. Well, how would you feel about that? Well, if you wouldn't do that in the stock market, why do it with your advertising and marketing? You just got to get tough about this. When somebody proposes a media or a strategy, the big questions that must be answered are when and how will we be able to absolutely, accurately measure our return on investment? You mean you don't believe in any image building? Sure I do. As a secondary bonus benefit of doing a lot of measurable, responsible direct response advertising and a lot of very effective target marketing. This tough-minded attitude will save you an enormous amount of money. Well, now what? You have undoubtedly heard the ancient chestnut, how do you eat an elephant? The same way you eat a burger, one bite at a time. I'm hopeful you will not let yourself be overwhelmed and immobilized by all the ground we've covered and by everything you've been handed in this kit. It is an elephant. There's no doubt about that. And you have to get into it, one bite at a time. I'll tell you a quick little story. Last year, the president of a medium-sized computer software and service company from Maryland heard me speak at a public event with Zig and Peter. He bought the previous incarnation of this kit. He bicycled it to each of the six managers of the different operating divisions of his company with the caution that if they were going to do anything with it, they should pick just one marketing task to apply it to. You could do the same. If you've been neglecting your past customers and you could use a cash flow surge, zero in on that and that alone. If your biggest need is getting brand new qualified prospects, just zero in on that. In the software company example, just one of the six division managers grabbed the ball and ran with it. And he took one aspect of his business, acquiring new students for their training classes, and he increased the productivity of their direct mail by 300%. Believe me, he's the hero. And the other five managers are playing catch-up. I really hope you'll pick up this ball and run with it. I look forward to hearing of your successes and seeing your work. And I would like us to have a continuing relationship. And to facilitate that, I urge you to subscribe to my newsletter. It's my monthly link with my inner circle, my continuing marketing dialogue. For more information and a special offer, please pick up the phone and call the special toll-free hotline set up just to give you my very best subscription offer. That number is included in your kit. At last count, my magnetic marketing systems have performed successfully and profitably in 68 different types of businesses, industries, professions, and sales fields. Give it a willingness to learn, a little patience and persistence, and careful attention to the models in this kit, there is absolutely no reason why magnetic marketing systems will not work for you, too. I hope that gives you confidence as inspiration to action. Thank you for investing in this kit, and thank you for listening.